men who refuse to support their leader. They're facing federal hate crime charges. One of the seven men arrested is Samuel Mullet, the leader of the sect. Jefferson County, Ohio Sheriff Fred Abdallah says there were at least five victims of the attacks.
This is very degrading to an Amish man. The one Amish man said he'd rather die than have his beard cut off.
The area around Cairo's Tahrir Square was relatively calm early today as soldiers put up barbed wire barricades to separate protesters and police. The country's military supreme council issued an apology on Facebook for the loss of life in the recent violence. Meanwhile, three American college students suspected of throwing Molotov cocktails during the Cairo protests will be held for at least another 4 days now. U.S. service members are among the millions caught up in the holiday travel rush, anxious to have some family time amid overseas deployments. Jason Tinker with the U.S. Army arrived at Atlanta's International Airport to a cheering crowd.
When we walked down to the baggage claim, there was about 600 people just all of a sudden started whistling and clapping, and it was an amazing feeling, amazing.
Welcome home, soldier. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
Shop Lowe's for incredible Black Friday savings. Take home an 18-volt DeWalt drill for only $99, a savings of $80. You can also buy a 14-gallon shop vac wet-dry vac for just $29, a savings of $50. For these and more great Black Friday values, shop Lowe's through Monday. Stores open at 5 a.m. on Friday. Or get a head start by shopping at Lowe's.com Thanksgiving Day with free parcel shipping through Monday. Hurry in. Supplies won't last long. Lowe's. Never stop improving. Offers valid 11/24 through 11/28.
A 51-inch Samsung plasma TV for less than $500? My husband's gonna go nuts.
Member Carol Farabee on the Sam's Club Members Only Day After Thanksgiving event.
It's like they saw my list. One-of-a-kind toys, stocking stuffers under $10, maybe some nice jewelry for myself.
The excitement begins Friday at 5 a.m. and at samsclub.com Thanksgiving Day.
I'm taking my list and checking things done.
Receive a $20 gift card when you become a Plus member this weekend only. Sam's Club. Savings made simple. Limited quantities available on all items. No rain checks.
No need to wait for Black Friday. Lots of us started our holiday shopping back in the beginning of November.
We're seeing sales up 25% over the same time last year.
Aaron Press is the director of market analysis for Chase Payment Tech, a company that processes sales online. He says individual transactions are, on average, for smaller amounts than in the past, but there are so many more of them overall, the trend is for substantially increased spending.
We are encouraged by what we've seen. They seem to be moving in a direction that isn't necessarily in line with a lot of other economic indicators.
Because the Cyber Holiday Pulse Index tracks what people are actually spending rather than what they say they're going to spend, some think it provides a better look at the economy.
We do see sort of real-time transactions. We don't report them, obviously, in exactly real time, but we do see actual things happening from the merchants.
And the news for e-tailers is very good. I'm Elisa Parenti from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Blurriness, wavy lines, blind spot, these are all symptoms of a chronic condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, also known as wet AMD. It can develop quickly, and it's a leading cause of blindness in people 60 and older. Learn about your risk factors and find out how a retina specialist can help. Just visit amdawareness.org. And if you aren't seeing clearly, get checked now. Knowing the symptoms may save your sight. Learn more at amdawareness.org today. This message was brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech.
You hear that? That's the sound of 68 million shopping carts being filled. 275,000 homes being built. Yep, that's the sound of a CSX train doing its part to move the economy forward. Sounds pretty good. CSX trains are the most efficient way to bring goods to market. See how at CSX.com. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
If insurance was sold in the grocery store, it'd be easier to compare. Sydney here is in the market for car insurance.
That's right.
So what do you think of these brands? State Farm, Geico, Progressive, and Allstate.
Honestly, they're all pretty much the same to me.
Well, they all give safe drivers a discount, but look at the Allstate shelf.
What's that? A coupon?
Even better. It's a check. Only Allstate rewards safe drivers with an extra bonus every 6 months you're accident-free.
Nice.
Call Allstate today, and you'll also get a lifetime membership in Good Hands Roadside Assistance absolutely free. Get 24/7 access and low flat rates on everything from tows to tire changes. For your free membership kit, just call a local agent or 888-ALLSTATE today.
Shop less, get more. Make one call to an Allstate agent.
Bonus check not available in every state. Feature is optional. subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Allstate Property and Casualty Insurance Company and Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company and their affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
It's the same each time with progress. First they ignore you.
Then they say you're mad.
Then dangerous. Then there's a pause. And then you can't find anyone who disagrees with you. Welcome to your new reality. Welcome to your new opportunity. Welcome to your new hope. Welcome to First Shift with Tony Trupiano.
Yes, good morning, and welcome to the best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano show. I'm Jeff Radford, and sitting in, bringing you some of the best clips we've had so far as the show started. And, of course, very thankful for a lot of things in life, and especially this job, this opportunity, to be able to talk to people, get people together, to get up, to stand up, to fight for what you believe in. And so I thought it would be good on this Thanksgiving Day to go back into the archives, if you will, and bring to you one of the guests we initially had early on in the show. Bruce Levine wrote a book, Get Up, Stand Up, that we found to be almost the handbook, the guidelines to being part of the First Shift listening audience, and we brought it to you. Here it is, Bruce Levine talking with Tony Trupiano back in June.
How many times have these words come out of my mouth? It's not enough to show up anymore. It's time to stand up, right? You've heard me say it over and over again at every rally I speak at every Democratic club you invite me to, I say the same thing. It is time to stand up. But what does that mean? I have found, by the way, the manual, the field manual for the First Shift radio show. It is in the form of the book I have in my hand right now and my next guest. I'm happy to tell you that this will be the first of two interviews, because just one interview with Bruce Levine wouldn't been enough. Bruce Levine joins us now. He is a writer and speaks widely on society, culture, politics, and psychology, and where psychology intersect. He is the author of three books, including Surviving America's Depression Epidemic and Common Sense Rebellion. His latest book is the one that I am here to share with you today. It is entitled Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populace, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite. Bruce Levine joins us from Cincinnati this morning. Thank you for writing the field manual for First Shift. Bruce, it's a pleasure to have you on the show this morning.
Good to be on your show, Tony.
Well, you know, here, I'll just, again, throw the statement out. It's not enough to show up. Now you've got to stand up. It sounds like the right thing to say, and I guess I'm using it still because it seems to resonate with people. I think we need to define a little bit further what that means. What I hope we accomplish over the next two visits together, Bruce Levine, is an opportunity for people to begin to understand the reality of where they're at, why they may feel the way they feel, and then by extension, getting them up off the couch and getting them engaged. Bruce, do you think you can help me with that task a little bit?
Sure. That was the goal of the book.
Well, I appreciate that. By the way, my producer and I are both in love with this book, and I'm going to make a pledge today. In fact, I'm going to do this when we get a hold of Gail later on. I want to buy 20 copies of this book. I want to give it to 20 of my audience members. And I want people to begin to understand the reality of what it means to get up and stand up. With that said, Bruce Levine, obviously there are a lot of disenfranchised folks in this world. Is there a particular reason why we're just doing more complaining and less action?
Yeah, I think what happens to a lot of people, and people around the world know this a little bit more than the Americans, who are still kind of, a lot of us are in denial, think that we still live in a democracy. A democracy means that you have real power over your life. And most Americans at some level know that this government can just invade and occupy another country without the majority of Americans even understanding why. They can just bail out these two big to fail corporations and, you know, Wall Street scoundrels, and most Americans oppose it, but it still goes on. And so increasingly we become like a kind of banana republic psychologically, whereas people really feel completely powerless to stop things that they don't want to have. And so what happens is that just psychologically, at some point, when you move into this kind of state of where there's so much external kind of oppression that you can't really change, you move into a kind of internal oppression, a kind of defeatism, a kind of fatalism, or what Bob Marley, sort of the poet laureate of oppressed people around the world, has called mental slavery. And so he sang a lot about how to emancipate ourselves from this mental slavery.
Well, you know, in the book, you start off with some information by historians Lawrence Goodwin, and you're right. Goodwin concludes that the democratic movements are initiated by people who are not resigned to the status quo or intimidated by established powers, and who have not allowed themselves to be, quote, culturally organized to conform to established hierarchical forms, unquote. Now, that is brilliant. I mean, that's truly brilliant, and it really is the basis. You know, I've only been on the air 8 weeks after a five-year absence from the airwaves. You know, when this opportunity came about, for me it wasn't about doing a radio show. It was about starting a movement. Am I on the right track?
Yeah. I mean, the interesting what Goodwin did was spent the whole life. He was a journalist first and then moved into being a historian, and he spent a lot of his career studying democratic movements, and so he was interesting for me. He was interesting for me for a couple of levels. One was to just look at the sort of strategies and tactics that people have utilized in democratic movements, so I go a lot into that and get up stand-up. I mean, there's three important areas. One is just understanding how you're being oppressed and exploited, and I think a lot of Americans get that far more than a lot of pundits think. The second is understanding the strategies and tactics that you need to utilize to take back power, which we've lost. We've forgotten some of those, so I talk a lot about that in Get Up, Stand Up. But the third piece is the biggest piece that we're completely ignoring, and that's the major reason why I wrote Get Up, Stand Up, was understanding the psychological and cultural building blocks for democratic movements. And what was interesting for me with Goodwin, reading him, is I've been a psychologist for over 25 years, is that the same kind of building blocks that are necessary for individuals to recover from their own periods of deep malaise and deep emotional difficulties are the same ingredients that are necessary for democratic movements to build. And these are having and recovering individual self-respect and recovering a sense of a collective self-confidence that one could win. And along with these, it means recovering one's determination, one's courage, one's guts, old-fashioned virtues that aren't really talked enough about in school today, and recovering solidarity. I mean, that is huge. There's no democratic movement that succeeds without all those things: risk, guts, intelligent risk, solidarity, self-respect restored. All these things are big variables, and so I spend a lot of time thinking about how those things have been lost. And I go through 12 major areas and Get Up, Stand Up, but also how we recover it. That's the most important thing I care about.
Right, and we're going to get into this as much as we possibly can. Again, my guest is Bruce Levine, author of the book Get Up, Stand Up. It is available in bookstores everywhere. You know, we've actually earlier this week had that caller who finally said what should have been said long ago. There are more of us than there are of them. You talk about being outnumbered, but you also talk about unlearning powerlessness, which is something that you were just referencing. And, you know, maybe that's where at the crux of what we're going on right now is we feel powerless, and we do need to unlearn that. But how long a process is that? Because I don't have a lot of time, Bruce Levine, for this movement.
Well, I mean, there's different levels. I mean, all of us can be doing something. I think that's the most important, one of the most important messages that I want to convey. You don't, I mean, there's a lot of people who feel like, well, you know, I'm not, you know, Bruce Levine, I'm not an author here, I don't get on the radio, I'm not Tony, you know, with a radio show. What the heck can I do? That's a common experience that a lot of people have. And I think one of the things that I want to convey is that since we've been broken on so many different levels of our society, there's so many different levels that we can recover our feelings of having some power, which are necessary for real democracy. And so one of the areas that I focus in on is just how young people have been broken. That's sort of the scariest thing, and one of the scariest things in America, because if you take a look at the history of democratic movements, or even, you know, contemporary democratic movements, say in Egypt, it's young people out there who are in the forefront because, you know, they don't have family responsibilities, and it should be easier for them to take the risks to get out there. And in America, we have, through a lot of different ways, broken the spirit of resistance against oppression and young people. And so the good news is that there's many different ways that once you understand how young people's spirit of resistance has been broken, all of us have been a part of that, and all of us can do something to transform that.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, going back to the work, Get Up, Stand Up, you write, pain is reduced by a platform in which one's voice can be heard by others. Pain is increased when one feels completely voiceless, impotent, and powerless. Obviously, this is an opportunity. This show is an opportunity for every people. I say to you all the time, we all own the show. It's not my show. It's our show. So we've got an opportunity here, and we need to make sure that we take advantage of that. You know, and so with that said, and again, as you go on throughout this book, it seems to me very clear, if people are trying to understand the base at why they may be a little bit paralyzed, there is a psychological reason to this, and the good news is we can address it and move on from it.
Yeah. I mean, so for example, in many different areas of life, we'll just take a stick with this area of young people. What's happening to them in their schools today? Well, that's an area that we can do a lot about. I mean, historically, a lot of anti-authoritarian critics of American schooling. This goes way back to Henry David Thoreau to Mark Twain. To by the way, across the board politically, from left anti-authoritarians, people like Alfie Cohn, to libertarian anti-authoritarians, have all understood that a big problem of standards schools in America has been that despite what information they're conveying, the big message that they teach is for people to just obey, often obey things that are really don't make any sense, and that's not been taught in these places is critical thinking and curiosity. And too many Americans out there think about their years in school as a place where they lost interest in reading and lost interest in thinking about things rather than got excited about it. And this has gotten much worse with these Democrat-Republican bipartisan No Child Left Behind and Race to the Top, which is now going to create public schools that are totally fear-based with this testing. And this fear-based thing has to do with if administrators are terrified if kids don't pass these standardized tests, which, by the way, have nothing to do with having people think more critically and challenge authority and all that kind of thing, challenge illegitimate authority. And so there's fear in administrators, teachers have fear, parents have fear, and if you have a fear-based educational system, you're not going to be able to think critically. You're not going to be able to learn the fundamentals of democracy, which is to decide which authorities in your life are legitimate or not legitimate, and to question, resist, and challenge. And without that, you know, you're not going to have democracy. And there's a lot of things that we can do about that. Teachers, counselors, parents, all of us can do something about that.
All right, we need to take a quick break here. Bruce Levine with us. Get Up, Stand Up is the book. Now do you see why we were so excited? Now do you see why we've been referencing this book for a couple of weeks? It all makes sense. Let's take the break. We'll be back on First Shift. I'm Tony Trupiano.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Hi, Tony Trupiano here. One of my pet projects for 2011 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org. That's www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses and it only takes a few minutes and it's free as well. So if you have yet to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says Register to Vote. We all care about our democracy, sure we do. But if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are about voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we've all had enough of that. Go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button right now and register. Thank you.
Sound off on our Facebook page, facebook.com/1310WDTWAM.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off, than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Recently on First Shift.
Joining me now is Jerry Persaud, the Senior Vice President of Advancement at Gleaners Community Food Bank.
Probably the single biggest thing that's happening is happening at the federal level now, and that's looking at the food stamp program. In 2006, there were 26.5 million people participating in the food stamp program. Then you had the economic decrease, and in 2011, there were 44.2 million. That's a huge increase in the number of people seeking food help. And so if you cut that program by 10%, the jobs aren't there for people. What are they going to do? That will have a tremendous impact on what's going to happen at our local level.
First Shift with Tony Trivium on 1310 WDTW. First Shift is more than a radio show. It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity doll?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contests.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Call Tony and tell him what's on your mind. 1-888-552-3595. This is First Shift with Tony Trupiano.
Welcome back. 10 minutes before the top of the hour. Again, my guest, Bruce Levine. He is author of the book, Get Up, Stand Up, really the field manual for this program. It is what we will refer to from this point forward. And I assure you, this will become the Bible, my Bible. This is one of those books that I plan to read repeatedly. And I'm glad that Bruce Levine is here with us. You know, Bruce, does the media have, do they have some responsibility in dragging down the American people? Just yesterday in Greece, as you know, a major protest, hundreds of thousands of people show up. We celebrate when we get, 300 people at a rally. It seems to me that there's this disconnect with what's happening globally to what's happening locally. Does the media share some responsibility in that?
Sure. I mean, there's definitely the problem of the corporate media not exposing the American people to what's going on in the rest of the world in terms of people actually. A lot of the world, they're taking much more seriously democracy than Americans are here, and so it's always important for those running the show, the corporate elite, what I call the corporatocracy, that it's always important for them that courage doesn't become contagious because of they saw what happened in the Middle East and that part of the world. Once certain people start to kind of think it's legitimate for them to actually fight for their rights and not get pushed around, that kind of thing is contagious. So that's always a kind of great fear for the corporate elite, that people just start to make connections here of what's going on around the rest of the world in America, and people in America start thinking like, well, why can't we be doing the same thing, not putting up with this stuff, doing things like general strikes, which is, you just haven't seen in America, certainly in recent history. And that's really the way that business gets, that's how you get their attention, when they start losing money. I mean, they don't really care that much about all kinds of things that people do to protest, including, hundreds of thousands of people just demonstrating against the government. As long as they're not losing money, they don't care that much. But in general strikes, they do.
It goes back to something I say all the time on this show, folks. Three words, what are they? Follow the money. Let me just take an issue, Bruce Levine, and then we're going to try to get in everything we can before we got to let you go at the top of the hour. Labor unions are a very important part of the Southeast, the state of Michigan and Southeast Michigan for sure. Yet Republicans especially have decided to co-opt this issue and really have attacked collective bargaining. This should be a rallying call for union members. In fact, my most recent blog post was asking people in unions to get closer to the unions, to re-engage. We do need to get folks in unions to re-engage. I believe that it's organized labor that's going to finally move us beyond where we're at right now. You know, why do you think the Republicans have decided that they're going to pick on organized labor of all the crazy things?
I think one of the really great hopeful things that I point out and get up stand up is that the elite are arrogant and they're often stupid. I mean, and that they make these kind of mistakes of arrogance where they've already crushed the unions in many ways in America. Here we've got it from, you know, a generation ago, 35% of people in America were part of the labor unions, and now it's 12%, and the private sector is down to 6 or 7%, and so they've already kind of crushed unions. They already got these folks in Wisconsin to agree to take these major cuts they had to increase their contributions, the pension funds, and in their health care benefits, and that wasn't good enough for them. They wanted to completely break their ability to collectively bargain, and they went too far. I mean, and that's what happens when you're arrogant. And often, if you take a look at history of democratic movements, when people who are in control, they lose touch with what the line is, where they've gone too far, and they revitalize movements. And hopefully that's exactly what's happening to the American union movement, where there's lots of reasons I go through and get up, stand up, how that's been crushed. And a lot of it has to do with the corporate elite, but a lot of it, unfortunately, is union movement themselves had gotten too tame, had gotten too conservative. And we saw in the 1970s, I come from a union family, so I'm aware of what happened even then when union leadership was getting too tame, and workers themselves had to move into wildcat strikes. My father was part of the wildcat strike of postal workers in 1970. There were Teamster wildcat strikes then. You know, basically workers having to even revolt against their own leadership. Why? Because their leadership had been kind of sort of like been playing the game of management too much. And so what hopefully will happen here, this is the dream of working people all care about real democracy out there, is that in this kind of backlash against their attempt to destroy collective bargaining, guys like in my state, Kasich is trying to do it, the Ohio governor and Walker in Wisconsin, all these New Jersey governor, that not only will we recover collective bargaining, we'll now start our own counterattack where we're wanting even more rights. It's like, and that's often what's happened in American history. Now we start to say, you know, it's not good enough. We have to start getting people back on. We have to do what people in Germany do. By the way, a lot of Americans don't realize that in Germany, union members occupy half of the members on board of directors. They get control there. That's why their economy is a heck of a lot better than America. You've got union involvement at the very top on corporate boards, and that's what we've got to fight for. And eventually have worker control over factories, have worker co-ops, and that was the initial goal of unions here, and we backslided, and eventually we've got weaker and weaker.
Well, and again, that can all be turned around, and as we learn in Get Up, Stand Up, Bruce Levine's book, there is a process that I'm going to share with this audience. That's why we decided to do this in two parts, and two parts isn't going to be close enough. Folks, I'm on page 42 of a book. I mean, we're 30 minutes, almost 30 minutes into an interview, and I'm on page 42 of this book. It is this critical. Get Up, Stand Up may be the most important book written for our generation. And I mean that sincerely. If you truly care, if you are passionate about your future, if you desire change, if you believe in this movement that I talk to you about on an everyday basis, this book is a must-read for you. Very quickly, demoralized, disorganized, broken, or what? What's going on, Bruce Levine?
Well, I think that was one of the my original article that I wrote, Are Americans Broken People? I was very curious about what other Americans would view our political passivity, which, you know, it's pretty sad when you take a look at our reaction to these senseless wars and corporate bailout, how few Americans are really active. And so there's, of course, the people at the elite will always view passivity as that people are happy, they're satisfied with their lot. And, of course, the opinion polls and common sense show that's ridiculous. People are not happy with their lot. So the other explanations are that people are ignorant. They're stupid. They just don't know what's going on out there. And I reject that completely. Again, the polls show that people know enough. Maybe all of us can't know everything, all the different ways we're getting exploited and ripped off out there. We can't know all these industrial complexes. But we know enough to know that that we should be spending our money at home rather than helping prop up some dictators in Afghanistan and all this this kind of stuff. People know enough on a lot of these things, and so ignorance is not the answer. And I think once people understand that, they stop dividing themselves. They stop having contempt for their fellow Americans, which bothers me, which worries me, that people see our inactivity and we just get disgusted with one another. It's the reality is that what happens is when we eat any human being on an individual basis, whether it's spousal abuse or it's a parental abuse.
Yeah, and Bruce, I hate to interrupt you. We are just out of time, which is why I'm glad we're doing a part two.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Truppiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Recently on First Shift.
Joining me is Professor Gordon Lafer.
One of the problems with one of the versions of right to work that somebody is talking about introducing in Michigan, which would be aimed strictly at teachers and the school system. There has never been a right to work law like that because it makes no economic sense. You're not going to attract companies into out of state by attacking teachers. But what you will do is put Michigan at a competitive disadvantage in recruiting and retaining the highest quality teachers. If you say, well, we're going to cut down, you know, union bargaining power and wages and benefits for Michigan teachers, any teacher who has a choice who's deciding are they going to go to Michigan or a neighboring state is going to have an incentive to go elsewhere. So at a time when the state is trying to have a strong education system, I mean, both for all kinds of reasons, including being able to compete for these higher skilled jobs, to put in a law that says we're going to undermine the quality of teachers we can attract seems backwards economically.
First Shift with Tony Truppiano
on 1310 WDTW.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us, like us, love us. At Tony Truppiano on Twitter and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Truppiano page today.
And joining us now is Cheryl Witten, the president of the Michigan Advisory Board for Blessings in a Backpack.
Blessings in a Backpack is a national organization. This teacher was concerned because she had kids in her school who came back from the weekend tired and hungry and by no means ready to learn. These children are on the free and reduced lunch program during the school week, but no one thought, what happens to these children when they go home on Friday? So came up with a very simple idea, let's pack a backpack with food to take home with them on Friday, and they would return their backpack on Monday to be refilled.
All right, so if I contact blessingsinabackpackmi.org, how do I get involved?
There is a page to make a donation, and then we as the Michigan Board will determine where the greatest need is.
Blessingsinabackpackmi.org.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Truppiano, or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310WDTW.com today.
And welcome back. Thanks for joining us on this Thanksgiving Day edition, special edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Truppiano. I'm Jeff Radford sitting in and bringing you the best clips. Of course, just heard from Bruce Levine already this morning. And the next clip I want to bring you, Cindy Estrada is vice president of the UAW. Very thankful that she's taking part in this show and that she comes on so often and takes time out of her busy schedule to do so. One thing that I think people in the state of Michigan will be thankful for is her negotiations with the state of Michigan, getting people back to work and a fair deal as well. Here's what she had to say recently when she joined us earlier this month, and when the first question that Tony asked her was about dealing with Governor Snyder and getting a fair negotiation and deal done. We start right there with her answer.
You know, I want to give a lot of credit to all the workers on the bargaining committee because everyone made a commitment in the beginning that what was most important was our new solutions report that was going to look at efficiencies in the government, that was going to focus on the fact that when workers have real input, we can create efficiencies and make a better government for all Michigan citizens, and also looking at privatization and really studying that and where it doesn't make sense and the management-to-worker ratio. And I think we've stayed together on all those issues and won some important victories there.
Well, you know, it's kind of fascinating, and I'm going to kind of just focus on this for a little bit. This idea that, and we understood that going into this, you know, the governor has had a certain posture, Cindy Estrada, about the way he wants to negotiate, and he was actually demanding long before you even sat down that there were going to have to be certain concessions. Cindy, he didn't get any of what he demanded. And I find that fascinating. But what I think is really interesting about the whole process and about at least what I've been able to read about what this contract does is it really does exactly what he needed it to do, but not at all the way he said we needed to explore how to get there. So we ended up where it needed to be without doing it his way.
You know, and I think that's really important, and it was mostly because as unions together, we really looked at where we could create savings and really push the state to look at their side of the street. So when we look at healthcare, there, we know that there's better ways to look at healthcare instead of cost shifting, you know, to save money. And so we pointed that out to the governor. We also pointed out that there was tons of inefficiencies in the state that workers have been raising for years, but no one's really listening, and that if we really wanted to save money and not kick the can down the street, as the governor says, then we need to look at those savings if we're going to be in the same position every year from now. So we were going to look at really the real problems in the state instead of blaming state workers for those problems. So I do got to, you know, commend the government the governor for being open to looking at those. And we're going to put committees together that are going to look at just that. Workers should not be vilified when we have a management-to-worker ratio that just doesn't make sense in our state. And so we're going to look at all of those things together and figure out how we save money those ways instead of attacking workers.
Well, you know, Cindy, if we can talk about the new solutions, I think it was back in July, you know, we had you in studio, and this was before serious negotiations began. And, you know, the governor had actually sent out a message, through the media saying, you know, we need to cut $145 million. You know, they're gonna have to come to the table, and they need to understand that they're gonna have to pay more for their health care. There are just certain realities, and of course, you folks had just come out with the study that showed that the management to worker ratio was way out of whack, and that you could actually accomplish what he wanted monetarily just by tweaking the management to worker ratio. That in and of itself would have done it, but I don't know that I had any optimism that you would be able to do that, because, Cindy, if we look at everything this Republican legislature and this Republican governor has done in the last 11 months, none of it, not a single thing, save this contract, has gone the way we hoped it would.
You know, because it's really sad. What you see is a bunch of legislators looking at how you solve problems without involving workers. And it's really easy to sit on their high perches. It's really easy to, you know, have this ideology and say that these decisions make sense that they're doing. But really the smarter way to go is to sit down and talk to workers and let labor and management work together to solve some problems. And I think that's what we're on the right path of doing. It's going to take a lot of work, and it's not going to happen overnight, but at least there's a commitment to begin to do that process.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this worker to management to worker ratio, because that really, again, I read that report. And certainly it more than would cover what he initially said they needed to save in this contract. How realistic is that change now going to be, and what kind of response are you getting from the workers on just that part of the contract?
Well, I mean, I think when we first came out with that, people assume that we're saying fire all managers because there's too many. And, you know, and after sitting down with the governor and sitting down with others in the state, you know, that's not what we mean at all. What we mean is let's do a study. Let's look at departments. And where there's management that, you know, is top heavy, where it doesn't make sense, then let's look at how we change up, you know, that ratio by adding more workers to the front lines. And, you know, let's do it. And there may even be departments where we need more management and others where we need less. But let's look at it strategically. Let's look at it together. And let's make the decision that's going to be the best for the citizens that are getting those services and for the workers that are delivering them. So I think it's very realistic. But, I think it's going to take us really working together and analyzing the structure and going deeper And I'm excited to do that.
Well, I'm excited too. I got to tell you, when the announcement, Cindy, when the announcement came out that you guys had come to a tentative agreement, I was shocked. I didn't expect it. I didn't see it coming. And you know, I thought, okay, they're going to go now into fact-finding mode. And God only knows how long this thing gets delayed. And I really thought that we were looking at maybe the first of the year or even longer than that. Were you surprised that this came to a conclusion so quickly?
You know, I wasn't surprised. I was always hopeful because I thought that we had some really good arguments on why we could get a tentative agreement. I think that there's always some of those on the other side of the table that really are more interested in going to what we call impasse, which is a type of arbitration with the Civil Service Commission. But you know, we didn't focus on those naysayers. We really just stayed at the table and kept showing the proof that we could get this agreement done. And luckily, you know, we sat down with the governor and he saw that it made more sense. And it would have been a shame not to get an agreement when we have four GM and Chrysler workers sitting down at the table showing they can work together. You know, we need to show that we can do the same in the state. I think it's good for Michigan. I think it's good for the workers. I think it's good for management. And it's good for all of us.
Yeah, well, let's before we get to the break here, Cindy, I want to address something. And I realize I'm putting you a little bit on the spot here, but let's talk for just a minute about the UAW's success, not only with the Big Three, what I had been calling the Big Four, that would be the state of Michigan. You know, frankly, the UAW did something that is absolutely amazing. You saved jobs, you actually grew jobs, and more importantly, you protected workers in a historic way. Who would have thought just a couple months ago that we would be sitting here in November truly having that to be thankful for?
You know, what's really funny to me, having been around, you know, maybe not as long as others, but been around a while, workers have always wanted to do that. They've always been really smart at the table about it being about protecting jobs, about making sure that there's a long-term vision for the company. We just didn't have management always thinking that we added anything. And so I think a crisis in our state really forces people to sit down and collaborate and figure out how we work together to accomplish really the same goals. And I think that's had a lot to do with it, because I think the UAW has always had that vision and the workers have always been really smart about that. And I think it's a real shame that as we're showing that in a crisis we can come together, that the legislature doesn't see that, that they're still trying to focus on emergency financial managers. They're still trying to focus on laws that, you know, are anti-union, instead of saying, let's come together, sit down at the table, and that we're capable of resolving these issues.
Let's pick it up from there after the break, because we can look at our neighbors in Ohio, and we can say, you know, that easily could have been us. It wasn't, but it easily could have been. And so I'd like you to, you know, kind of comment on that. We're going to take a very quick break here. Cindy Estrada, again, my guest. She's a vice president with United Auto Workers. For those of you that are not aware, and you should be, we talked about it enough. Cindy, along with a group of amalgamated unions, the SEIU, AFSCME, and others, came together and negotiated a united contract for State of Michigan employees. Yes, it was fair and equitable. Yes, it got them a raise. Yes, it was probably a shock to most people. And this is a huge victory. They are in ratification mode as we speak. We'll find out when they'll have the answer on this contract. But let's take a quick break. If you care to join us, 888-552-3595. I'm Tony Truffiano.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Truffiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Recently on First Shift.
Joining me now is Jerry Persaud, the Senior Vice President of Advancement at Gleaners Community Food Bank.
Probably the single biggest thing that's happening is happening at the federal level now, and that's looking at the food stamp program. In 2006, there were 26.5 million people participating in the food stamp program. Then you had the economic decrease, and in 2011, there were 44.2 million. That's a huge increase in the number of people seeking food help. And And so if you cut that program by 10%, the jobs aren't there for people. What are they going to do? That will have a tremendous impact on what's going to happen at our local level.
First Shift with Tony Trivino on 1310 WDTW.
Over 140 Rite Aid stores are unionized, with over 1,500 United Food and Commercial Workers members working with a union contract in stores all across Michigan. Because they are union members, they have access to higher wages, a company pension, a health care plan for themselves and their family, and UFCW Rite Aid workers proudly serve their communities and at the same time enjoy a living wage and benefit package. Please support our union Rite Aid workers and make sure they know how much we appreciate the work they are doing. To join the UFCW family of drugstores, visit UFCW.org or call 248-585-9671.
Hi, Tony Trupiano here. One of my pet projects for 2011 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org. That's www.thetonyshow.org and click on the register to vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses and it only takes a few minutes and it's free as well. So if you have yet to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says register to vote. We all care about our democracy, sure we do. But if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are about voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we've all had enough of that. Go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the register to vote button right now and register. Thank you.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Trupiano, or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310WDTW.com today.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Marilyn Olson, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity doll?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contests.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also, follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
Cindy Estrada, my guest. She is, of course, vice president with United Auto Workers, coming off really a marathon sessions, plural, to come to an agreement with the state of Michigan. As I said before the break, amalgamation of unions decided to bargain together, which some thought was a risk. Obviously, it didn't end up being a risk. It ended up being a the right thing to do. And, you know, Cindy, as we look to our neighbors in Ohio, they were, you know, on election day just last Tuesday going to the ballot box, you know, to defeat, thankfully, a measure that would have truly weakened collective bargaining, you know, if they would have just taken a cue from their friends here in Michigan. Certainly what you have done, the UAW, SEIU, AFSCME, and the unions, what you have done has shown that collective bargaining actually works in a pretty pristine way.
And isn't it exciting? I think, you know, all the citizens of Ohio just stood up and said that they believe that. They, you know, what they were really saying is that we want a seat at the table. We're capable of solving problems. And, you know, it's not in Michigan. Our laws are a little bit different, and so our bargaining is governed by the Constitution and the Civil Service Commission. So there's some things that legislatures can't do. However, make no mistake, Tony, one of the things that's happening right now is there's a lot of laws where they're trying to piecemeal gutting collective bargaining in our state. So we're still up against that in a very real way.
Well, again, we can easily turn to the success and say we don't need to change it because what we have works, Cindy.
That's right. That's right. And I'm hoping that those who make that we elect to make the laws in the state see that. Unfortunately, you know, I'm still seeing bills out there. You know, these legislators are very ideological. I mean, one which is crazy is to ban the ability of unions to hold meetings in public facilities. I mean, that would be like a corporation, Tony, saying, you know what, we have a problem, but we're not going to allow the people who are there to solve the problem meet to discuss it. they have to meet somewhere else. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. Why would you try and have workers not provide them a space with management to solve problems that are just going to be better for our citizens?
Well, that's...
So I still want to stay very, we need to stay very aggressive and pointing out where they're trying to gut collective bargaining here in a very piecemeal approach.
Yeah, there's no question that, we really do need to pay attention, not to mention the battle that we have coming up. And just a few weeks ago, we had Professor Gordon Lafer on this show to educate this audience about the truth of right to work. Of course, we know it is right to work for less, but that is a battle, Cindy, that is coming up, and it'll be after the first of the year, but it is coming up, and we need to pay attention to that, because we're going to need an army of people to fight the myth-truths that they are already putting out there about that legislation.
And I think businesses need to stand up, too, because really the businesses like Ford, GM, and Chrysler, and all, you know, and even the governor, we've proved that working together, that we can find solutions. We prove that, we can get a lot done. So when they bring up right to work, I think they're attacking both sides of the table, not just the union. They're attacking management labor relations. And I think they need to be, that needs to be pointed out, and everyone needs to speak up very loudly against that.
Yeah, no question. Cindy, let's talk a little bit about the state contract, the ratification process, when that ends, and when we might expect to get an answer from state workers on a yes or no on this contract.
So this contract is, you know, would go into effect in October of 2012, and so the ratification will happen in December. The very beginning of December, we'll know whether or not workers accept this agreement, and then because you have to have the agreement done so the governor can put it into his budget message. So first week of December. Answer.
Okay, have you had much feedback from state workers? I mean, the majority of the feedback I have has been mostly positive. I haven't actually had anything negative.
Okay, we've had very positive feedback. I think new solutions, people are you know, cautious about, but excited that we're actually going to have a chance to sit down and talk about privatization, management ratio, management to worker ratio, and efficiencies. They're happy about the raise. And so everything, I think, in the contract, people are, pretty excited about. What we're not excited about is workers are more focused on the fact that right now the legislature is trying to get, the 4% on the retiree health care and pension. So, which is not part of our bargaining. So we have to, I think workers are excited about the contract and nervous about, other laws that the legislature is trying to pass.
Well, certainly people can say what they will about Governor Snyder, and trust me, Cindy, I think you and I could both agree on a list that we would be in favor of, and a lot of things that we would be concerned about as it relates to this governor. But as it relates to this negotiation, the governor at least was honest enough to step up to the plate and say, you know what, I told you to bring me solutions and I'd look at them. You did, and he did. And we do need to give him credit for that.
I think he really showed real leadership on these issues. One thing that I often say is, just because, we can agree and give credit where we need to, but doesn't mean that there's not other issues that we have.
Absolutely.
One being, the fact that right now what's happening with welfare and the time limit. And I just did read something the other day, Tony. In the month of August, over 500 people were looking for jobs, and there were only 100,000 available. And so we're going to take you off welfare, and you need to get a job, yet the jobs aren't there.
Yeah, and the worst part is the legislators, there's one guy in Genesee County area, and I don't remember his name, that said, you know what? They just need to go out and find work. They have to stop being lazy. Just go out and find a job. Well, they're just not there, Cindy. They're just not. The jobs aren't there. And you can't go. You can't even go get a job at McDonald's. We had this conversation the other day. You can't get a job at McDonald's. It's not that they don't have jobs. They're not going to hire a head of household that has four children. They're not doing it, Cindy.
And the jobs out there, actually McDonald's, I hate to say this, but in some of the supplier industry, 80% of the cars is built by these workers in the supplier industry. And these are hard jobs. And right now we're sitting down at the table and companies are saying that they want wages like $10 and $11 an hour.
Yeah.
And then the other piece of the wage that no one talks about, and then saying that they're going to pay $200 or $300, $400 a month in their premium share for health care. Those are the kind of jobs that are being created. That's why I wish that the legislature would focus on creating jobs, good jobs, instead of trying to pass laws that are just going to continue to hurt workers.
Unfortunately, Senator Estrada, the reason they're not doing that is because the average person didn't contribute to their campaign, and therefore they can't benefit financially from their relationship with their constituency. It's sick, and it's wrong, it's immoral, and maybe we could talk more about that next month. In the meantime, Cindy, we're going to let you go for now. I hope that, you know, next month we can get you in studio. I know how busy you are at this time, and so I appreciate you being with us. Blessings to you and happy Thanksgiving.
Okay, thank you, Tony. Thank you.
You bet. Cindy Estrada, Vice President of the United Auto Workers. We're going to be open lines in the next half hour, so feel free to reach out to us, 888-552-3595. It truly is remarkable what the UAW and the other associated unions were able to accomplish with the state
Welcome
of Michigan.
Back,
I hope
thanks,
that you all
for
see
listening.
That.
If you're listening so far on the Best Of First Shift with Tony Trupiano, I'm Jeff Radford, and that was your first hour right there. It flies by quickly, doesn't it? Cindy Estrada joined us, obviously, and Bruce Levine earlier on in the show as well. Got plenty more clips to give you. So many great guests. I don't even know if I want to preview them right here or tell you what's coming up because you just got to stay tuned. I will let you know, though, however, one of the cups of coffee to this show, guy who basically doesn't need any coffee. He's just always fired up no matter what time of day it is. We'll be joining us next in the next hour. Harvey Santana was in studio to talk to Tony. Truly one of the good guys that we've met so far in the business. Lots to be thankful for, and we want to thank you, of course, for listening to our program and being a part, for following us on Facebook and liking us. It's First Shift with Tony Trupiano, or follow us on Twitter, at Tony Trupiano. We love interacting with people and especially getting their thoughts on things that we've presented to you, ideas, stories, anything that comes along. But now, top of the hour, and I can already smell the turkey cooking. It is a great and gorgeous Thanksgiving Day here in Michigan. Thanks for being a part of this. Thanks for listening. And again, stay tuned. Coming up after the top of the hour, after some CNN news, Harvey Santana in the Best Of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW. I'm Jeff Radford. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
And joining us now is Cheryl Witten, the president of the Michigan Advisory Board for Blessings in a Backpack.
Blessings in a Backpack is a national organization. This teacher was concerned because she had kids in her school who came back from the weekend tired and hungry and by no means ready to learn. These children are on the free and reduced lunch program during school week, but no one thought, what happens to these children when they go home on Friday? So came up with the very simple idea, let's pack a backpack with food to take home with them on Friday, and they would return their backpack on Monday to be refilled.
All right, so if I contact blessingsinabackpackmi.org, how do I get involved?
There is a page to make a donation, and then we as the Michigan Board will determine where the greatest need is.
blessingsinabackpackmi.org.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hillers, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
Mommy, sing me to sleep.
Sure, sweetie. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. You're a ball of gas that's very far. 32 light years in the sky. 10 parsecs, which is really high. Helium, carbon, and
hydrogen
fuse to make our starry friend. When it enters supernova stage, it explodes with bursts of rays. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole.
Thanks, Mom.
Mom.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, so it's up to parents to help create a brighter future for them. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Hey, it's Anthony from First Shift with Tony Trupiano. Weekdays 6 to 9, right here on 1310 WDTW, Dearborn, Detroit. CNN News is next.
CNN Radio, I'm Jim Ribble. Top story this hour, a twin-engine plane carrying as many as six people crashed last night in the Superstition Mountains east of Phoenix. Local resident Luis Ruiz saw it hit.
Flame shot up the side and out each side and right up and over the top of the flat iron. He hit that thing point blank.
Authorities say three children and three adults were aboard. Everyone is feared dead. An American Airlines flight made a safe emergency landing at Los Angeles International Airport last night after the crew smelled something burning in the cockpit. The Boeing 767 had taken off from LAX heading to New York's JFK Airport when it turned back. Director of Florida A&M's marching band has been fired as the school and local law enforcement look into a drum major's death. It may be related to hazing. School President James Ammon says he took the action to remove Julian White because of confirmed reports of past hazing in the music department.
We weren't able to stop it. And so that's why we thought that this action was appropriate at this time.
Thousands of American troops who've been serving in Iraq know they'll be home in a month or so. CNN's Martin Savage is in Kuwait, a staging area where many soldiers and Marines leaving Iraq are waiting for the transport home.
There are just white plates that are stacked high with turkey, with roast beef, with ham, with carrots, with green beans. I mean, if there is a mom out there that was worried that their son or daughter was not eating on Thanksgiving, they can forget all that. The plates are packed.
U.S. troops are among the millions caught up in the holiday travel rush today, heading home for Thanksgiving. Jason Tinker with the U.S. Army arrived at Atlanta's International Airport. We asked him what's the first thing he plans to do.
Kiss my wife. I've been married to her for 20 years, and I love her to death.
A 6.2 magnitude earthquake struck off the north coast of Japan today. Authorities say there was no immediate threat of a tsunami. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
Starting tomorrow at 5 a.m., get an LG front-load washer or dryer at the Home Depot for just $549 each. That's $900 off the pair. That's also just one example of the Black Friday savings all over the store. The LG washer and dryer have extra-large capacity. They're extra quiet. And at just $549 each, they're extra affordable. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. To November 28th, while supplies last, U.S. only, see store for details.
A 51-inch Samsung plasma TV for less than $500? My husband's gonna go nuts.
Member Carol Farabee on the Sam's Club Members Only Day After Thanksgiving event.
It's like they saw my list. One-of-a-kind toys, stocking stuffers under $10, maybe some nice jewelry for myself.
The excitement begins Friday at 5 a.m. and at samsclub.com Thanksgiving Day.
I'm taking my list and checking things done.
Receive a $20 gift card when you become a Plus member this weekend only. Sam's Club. Savings made simple. Limited quantities available on all items. No rain checks.
Now that the holiday travel season is underway, you are probably doing a little more driving, headed farther as you go over the river and through the woods. But too often in all the holiday prep, we forget about our tires.
Tires are the Rodney Dangerfield of the car.
No respect. I don't get no respect at all.
Dan Zielinski with the Rubber Manufacturers Association says it is essential to make sure your tires are roadworthy.
Very easy way to do that is just take a penny, turn it upside down, and put it in your tire's tread groove. And if you can see all of Lincoln's head,
he says then it's time for a new tire. Zielinski says basic tire maintenance is always important.
We recommend every month you check the tire pressure and inspect the tread depth to make sure that your tires are safe and ready to go.
The group is urging drivers to be safe by being tire smart and playing your part. Part, which is an acronym for pressure, alignment, rotation, and tread. And with gas prices higher this year than last, proper tire care can save you about 9 cents a gallon. I'm Steve Potusk from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Blurriness, wavy lines, blind spot, these are all symptoms of a chronic condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, also known as wet AMD. It can develop quickly, and it's a leading cause of blindness in people 60 and older. Learn about your risk factors and find out how a retina specialist can help. Just visit amdawareness.org. And if you aren't seeing clearly, get checked now. Knowing the symptoms may save your sight. Learn more at amdawareness.org today. This message was brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech.
You hear that?
That's the sound of 68 million shopping carts being filled, 275,000 homes being built. Yep, that's the sound of a CSX train doing its part to move the economy forward. Sounds pretty good. CSX trains are the most efficient way to bring goods to market. See how at CSX.com. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Shop Lowe's for incredible Black Friday savings. Take home an 18-volt DeWalt drill for only $99, a savings of $80. You can also buy a 14-gallon shop vac wet-dry vac for just $29, a savings of $50. For these and more great Black Friday values, shop Lowe's through Monday. Stores open at 5 a.m. on Friday. Or get a head start by shopping at Lowe's.com Thanksgiving Day with free parcel shipping through Monday. Hurry in. Supplies won't last long. Lowe's. Never stop improving. Offers valid 11/24 through 11/28.
A 51-inch Samsung plasma TV for less than $500? My husband's gonna go nuts.
Member Carol Farabee on the Sam's Club Members Only Day After Thanksgiving event.
It's like they saw my list. One-of-a-kind toys, stocking stuffers under $10, maybe some nice jewelry for myself.
The excitement begins Friday at 5 a.m. and at samsclub.com Thanksgiving Day.
I'm taking my list and checking things done.
Receive a $20 gift card when you become a Plus member this weekend only. Sam's Club. Savings made simple. Limited quantities available on all items. No risk.
It's the same each time with progress. First they ignore you.
Then they say you're mad.
Then dangerous. Then there's a pause. And then you can't find anyone who disagrees with you. Welcome to your new reality. Welcome to your new opportunity. Welcome to your new hope. Welcome to First Shift with Tony Trupiano.
Yes, good morning, and welcome to the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano show. I'm Jeff Radford, and sitting in, bringing you some of the best clips we've had so far as the show started, and of course, very thankful for a lot of things in life, and especially this job, this opportunity, to be able to talk to people, get people together, to get up, to stand up, to fight for what you believe in. And so I thought it would be good on this Thanksgiving Day to go back into the archives, if you will, and bring to you one of the guests we initially had early on in the show. Bruce Levine wrote a book, Get Up, Stand Up, that we found to be almost the handbook, the guidelines to being part of the First Shift listening audience, and we brought it to you. Here it is, Bruce Levine talking with Tony Trupiano back in June.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Tony Trupiano. Look forward to this hour every single month because Harvey Santana is just an amazing guy. Those of you who have listened to the show since May, I think Harvey began with us full-time once a month in June, and he spends an hour with us, and we've got some great topics to get to today. Of course, we will be doing our Occupy segment at 7:50, so Representative Harvey Santana will be with us to that point. But, guys, give me the intro, and let's get going. Well, I walk back down. No, and joining me now is State Representative Harvey Santana, who never backs down, and my good friend. How are you? Good to see you again this month.
Good morning. Good morning, 13:10 a.m. I am live here with you. This is great. The hour got moved back, so I got even more energy. I just woke up the coffee, ready to go.
Just what we needed was you with more energy.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of crazy because next month we're going to be right on top of a holiday. It seems to me it's just hard to believe we're already coming up to the end of the year. A lot going on.
Yeah.
In the legislature, a lot going on statewide, a lot going on close to home. You are a resident of Wayne County. I am a resident of Wayne County. We're going to get into a little bit of what's happening as we were discussing in the last half hour with Bob Ficano and Tarika Mullen and the whole Severance Gate. But before we do that, as you walked into the studio, you told me that you spent the day in jail, and I want you
not
to...
Not just jail, prison, brother.
Prison, not
I
jail,
I went all
prison.
The way. You know how they, you know how I am.
So before people freak out, tell us why you did that, of course.
Yeah, I was invited by the University of Michigan Dearborn by a dear friend of mine named Ed Begale, who is the chancellor over there, and they have this thing called a restorative justice program where they bring in students and people who are involved in some phase of, you know, the prison debate in Michigan and in United States to go in and understand what restorative justice principles are. There was about 80 participants in this program, and we got to sit one-on-one with inmates, people who have offended, and we went through dramatizations of real-life issues that have happened. And I'll be honest with you, Tony, I spent the entire day sitting next to a guy who has spent my entire life in prison, 36 years. I'm 39, so he spent 36 years in prison. And, you know, you walk away thinking about this from a wide spectrum. Of course, here he is. He offended. He has to pay back his debt to society, 36 years. I don't even know what he did. I didn't want to know at that point. I mean, you can only limit it to a handful of things. But 36 years, and then he's got more to go. At some point, do we say, look, how long do you got to spend time in prison before you've got it? It was very thought-provoking. Taxpayers are paying a lot of money to lock people up. In some cases, they need to be locked up and throw the key away. In others, my view when I walked out of it was, can we revisit this here?
Well, it's fascinating because I've known people in prison that have served time, and some of them that have been quite close to me, and I know that maybe they shouldn't be spending as much time as they have to. I'm a big believer that we need to, one of the things we should really be taking a look at are drug offenses. Is it time to legalize marijuana? We don't have to get into that conversation, but Harvey, I do wonder, because the prison system is extremely expensive, and in fact, we'll recall the superintendent of schools somewhere in the state that sent a letter to the governor that said, "I'd like you to designate my school as a prison because I'll get more per pupil that way."
Yeah,
we spend a lot of money incarcerating people in every state they do. That there's no question. But what did you walk away from that? What did you learn in that one day experience?
Well, you know what I walked out with? I walked out with 10 policy analysts, to be honest with you. I got called out by a young girl when we were doing kind of like the wrap-up. And she goes, what we would like is Representative Santana to introduce legislation that goes a long way to help the corrections, department, the budget, and all the issues. And, I thought, and I says, okay, I can't let this one slip, So I got up and I says, I'll tell you what, I'll do you one better. For all the guys who are locked up right now, I want you guys to stand up. Let me look at you. For all practical purposes, and this is not to be funny, but you got a lot of time on your hands. You're not going anywhere. You don't got no hot date. So I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you guys all the resources. I'm going to give you all the tools you need. And I've got a piece of legislation that I am working on right now. I got to punt the ball. I can't go any further with this thing. I've given it to the Republicans. They've helped. I've given it to members of my own party. They're helping. But you know what? I need you guys to look at this thing. I need you to break it. I need you guys to be critical of it. I need you guys to find every single problem with this piece of legislation, fix it, and send it back to me.
Okay.
And so now I've got 10 guys who I've got to make packets for. I'm going to send them all the stuff. And I think by the end of January of next year, I will have a solid piece of public policy. But you got to make the system
can
work,
I ask
man.
What the legislation would effectively do?
It's for my HIDA bill, the Homes Youthful Trainee Act. I want to extend it to the age of 26. If you're between the ages of 21 to 26 and you're HIDA eligible, I want to make sure that if we're not sending these guys to prison to pay restitution, that they're on the community working, paying back their debt to society. And so I think it's fair, and then at the end of it, they can walk away without a felony conviction if they're a first-time offender. And I think it's fair, especially now, because, guys do 2-3 years in prison. They come out with a felony, no education, no job training. To what? A bad economy? What do you think is going to happen within 3 months? They're going to go right back.
Well, you got to wonder if the bad economy had something to do with them committing the crime they committed to begin with.
Touché. Absolutely.
No way am I justifying robbing from somebody to pay your bills. And I'm not.
No.
But oftentimes, and we've seen cases where people have been literally forced because of their own personal circumstances to do things they wouldn't do in a normal economy or in a normal mindset, And, you know, I remember the guy that, the older gentleman that robbed the bank out in Macomb County, and the judge gave him one hell of a break because this guy was literally pushed to the very limits of what he could comprehend.
Well, what's the old saying? Desperate times call for desperate measures, and a lot of people right now are desperate. I mean, I'm with you. I don't in any way condone or justify people's actions. But by the same token, the people sent me to be innovative. They sent me to go up there and think out of the box and provide, you know, a solution to an issue that is plaguing right now our budget. I mean, $2 billion a year. And what do we get out of it? And so, you know, Governor Snyder is always talking about, you know, value for money. Well, let's talk about the value of the prison system if all we're doing is, you know, funding gladiator schools. Because I don't see anything good coming out of it.
No, there is nothing good coming out of it. Again, I don't know that, you know, it's not always about restitution. And, you know, we talk about retribution. We talk about rehabilitation. There's so much the system can do. It does offer. People take advantage of it. They don't take advantage of it. But at some level, Representative Santana, I think that, you know, you've got to have a carrot at the end of the stick.
That's right.
And if these guys aren't motivated, I mean, if the only motivation is to get out to what?
That's right.
You know, for some people, it's easier to be behind bars than it is to be out in society.
And you'd be surprised
somehow.
Tony, you'd be surprised how many times you hear that. I mean, seriously, inside, I mean, there were guys that said, you know, Santana, I don't know what I'm going to do when I get out of here. And they gave me their whole situation. And, you know, I just looked at them and I says, you know, these guys are going to end up back here because they just have no other viable option. They've been so institutionalized at this point that this is all they know.
Well, you know, I occasionally, and I'll admit it, I watch MSNBC does those lockdown shows.
Oh, I watch them all the time.
Yeah, and I've become a fan.
That, Gangland, all
right.
The other ones, yeah.
And I look at some of these people, especially these younger guys, I'm talking anywhere in their 20s, who have families. I mean, they literally have 2, 3, 4 children. They don't have a job record. They've been in jail 2, 3, 4 times. They've gone from jail now into the prison system, and there's a big difference between the two. As you pointed out to me when you got here today, and it makes you wonder what, you know, do we owe these folks something? I think as a society, we do owe them something. You know, a lot of these young men and young women don't know any other life, Representative. They just don't. And so we do owe them an opportunity. Is it education? Absolutely. I think education's a big piece of it as far as I'm concerned, but those opportunities are there.
You know, you just touched on something. During the campaign and prior to the campaign, I can't tell you how many people I ran into, especially young people. I went to a prison up in the Thumb, I believe it was, and it was a young for young offenders. Walking through the cell block, ran into a guy who happened to be from the district. Couldn't write this if I tried. And I asked him, I says, look, you got 6 months left. What are you going to do when you get out of here? He tells me, I'm going to get with my homies. You're going to get with your homies. How long you been locked up? 4 years. 4 years. That's all you're going to tell me? I'm going to get with my homies. I says, look, getting with your homies is going to get you one of three things. A, filthy rich beyond your wildest dreams. If you're smart, you do things right. Two, it's going to get you right back inside this can next time for a longer period of time. Number three, it's going to get you inside of a casket, probably closed casket now. Number one and number two are probably going to get you. Or I just say number three is going to get you before number one and number two will.
Yeah. We got to take a break. State Representative Harvey Santana is my guest. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Wayne County situation. There's a lot to talk about. Let's talk a little financial literacy as well. And it's interesting that this comes up because we were just talking about this on the show early last week. A lot to get to. You'll want to stay with us. If you want to join us, 888-552-3595. That's 888-552-3595. I'm Tony Truppiano. We'll take the break here on First Shift and be right back. Welcome back. 22 minutes after the hour. Tony with you. State Representative Harvey Santana with us as well, as he is every month at this time. And now we're going to turn our attention to Wayne County Executive Bob Ficano. What ended up getting tagged as severance gate, of course, it goes far beyond that. And we really don't know where this is headed at this point. The FBI is investigating. I'm a resident of Wayne County. The representative is also a resident of Wayne County, so we maybe take this a little more personally. But, Harvey, I'd love your thoughts on what's happening right now.
Well, just like everybody else in Wayne County, I'm upset. And I believe that the people in Wayne County have a right to be pissed off. You know, these political scandals, if you will, happen. And the first thing that people want to do is make the heads roll. Everybody's got to be held accountable. All these things have to happen. And they're absolutely right. It does have to happen. I would just caution people into understanding that we have a couple different processes now that we have to follow. The first process we had to deal with was this whole Turquia Mullen issue. You know, we're dealing with that. That's been dealt with. It's going to move into another phase because I think now she's going to sue to try to get the $700,000. Okay.
Right.
So that's a process. Now we got this other process where the FBI is now investigating. They've been in there for 2 years looking around for stuff, and finally they, you know, sprung the trap. So now they're in there looking at stuff. Now, there's another process where Fecano now has to go in and make changes in his administration. He's got to move around the players to figure out, you know, who's going to do what and how you react to this certain thing. And I would also say that for all the people that are asking for his head on a stick, just to step back and look 2-3 years ago at what was happening inside the city of Detroit. Mayor of Detroit was under all kinds of investigation, all kinds of criticism. It took an election, a re-election, to get Mayor Kilpatrick removed from office. So none of these things happen overnight. None of this stuff just, you know, happens because, you know, certain people start saying certain things. There's investigations, there's processes, there's questions that are now being asked. And to some extent, this is a good thing. Because I believe, and this is my criticism of Mr. Fecano, perhaps the executive took a couple steps back and let other people run the show when he should have been more engaged the entire time. You know, there's times when I tell my staff, here, you do this. I've got way too many other things that I got to focus on, and I trust them. And I trust them to do what's right on my behalf and what's, you know, right on behalf of the people
and
I represent.
And to interrupt you for just a moment, you have to trust them.
Yes. Yeah, look. We can always move beyond a mistake in politics. I tell this to my staff all the time, but the one thing that I absolutely, without a shadow of doubt, that I demand out of them is loyalty. I need you to be loyal to me, because if I can't trust you, then what are you doing around here? Because you're the ones that are helping me think.
Well, ultimately, it reflects on you.
Yes, right.
I mean, everything that happens under your purview is on you.
That's right. I mean, if one of my staff members goes out to a community meeting and starts raising all kinds of hell, what do you think is going to happen? I'm going to get the phone calls. I mean, the constituents have my cell phone number. It won't stop ringing. And so I depend on my staff to be very loyal to me and understand that they have my best interest. Now, the criticism that I would have of Mr. Fecano is that maybe he trusted the wrong people. I don't know. Maybe he gave them too much responsibility. I don't know. The other thing I will now look at, and this is a great time for the executive to look at his roster and start asking, how do you justify your existence in this administration? What is it that you do exactly? Because one of the undercurrents in this whole thing has been the salaries that some of these people make. So there are a lot of people out there in Wayne County right now, PhDs, attorneys, master's degrees, several years of business experience and, you know, experience in government, and can't find a job. Haven't had a paycheck in 5 years in some cases. And so when you look, and I know some of these people, and you know some of these people, and the people listening into the in the audience right now know exactly of some people who have had six-figure salaries, and you wonder, how in the hell did that guy get the job? Mm-hmm. What does that person do? And so I understand that, you know, to the victor goes the spoils, and you worked on a campaign and they like you, they trust you, and now you get a job. Well, that's fine, but does your resume meet the expectation of that salary? That's one of the things I would question.
And that's where part of the controversy comes in, especially as it relates to Takiyah Mullen. She went on to say, you know, listen, I brought in $5.5 billion in investments. And we played some audio earlier. Bob Fecano was on with Devin Scillian on Flashpoint yesterday. And gave him a piece of paper and said, here's the $5.5 billion. This is where it went. You know, is she attached to each and every one of those projects? Well, you know, they didn't have that conversation. All I'm suggesting, Representative Santana, is that transparency is critical. You know, and understanding the history of the Wayne County's executive's office with Ed McNamara, who was also involved in a investigation with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. You know, the only reason that one stopped or slowed was because he passed away. There seems to be a problem with cronyism. I was just explaining to the audience earlier, if you watch all of the people that are either not reelected or decide not to run for reelection, they have all found jobs within the Vacano administration, whether there seems to be a need for them or not. And they're all getting paid really well on top of getting their pensions.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that can't be ignored. And then we take it one step further. We, you know, one of the big issues in the Occupy movement, especially locally, and I get this because, you know, the people that either call the show or email me, is about money and politics. So let's talk a little bit about that, because you're right. To the victor goes the spoils, that's fine. But how many of these people, of the 3,200 people that are employed by the county of Wayne, how many of them actually donated money to the Bob Ficano for the county executive campaign? How many of them bundled the dollars? How many of them were rewarded for doing that? I don't know the answer to the question, but I do know that money in politics is a big issue for the people in the Occupy movement right now.
Well, you're absolutely right. But let me close the loop on the whole Ficano conversation. You know, I travel in political circles, Tony. You talk to other elected officials. You talk to the lobbyists and the people that have some of the bigger industries in the state. And everyone will tell you, look, Bob is generally a good guy. For the things that are going on, it's disappointing. But my thing is transparency. Look, let's be transparent about the thing. If you got nothing to hide, open up the floodgates. Here, which file do you want? What email do you want to read? What is it that you want? If there's nothing to hide, then hey, like they say in poker, I'm all in.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off. Than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Recently on First Shift.
Joining me now is Jerry Persaud, the Senior Vice President of Advancement at Gleaners Community Food Bank.
Probably the single biggest thing that's happening is happening at the federal level now, and that's looking at the food stamp program. In 2006, there were 26.5 million people participating in the food stamp program. Then you had the economic decrease, and in 2011, there were 44.2 million. That's a huge increase in the number of people seeking food help. And so if you cut that program by 10%, the jobs aren't there for people. What are they going to do? That will have a tremendous impact on what's going to happen at our local level.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on 1310 WDTW.
Hey, thanks for listening this morning to the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Thanksgiving Day morning. I'm Jeff Radford, normally sitting in the producer's chair, but today I get to introduce the clips and give you a little background information about them beforehand. And Buddy Reamer is a presidential candidate that you probably haven't heard too much about, since he's not considered a top candidate for the Republican Party, probably because he has ideas that actually make sense. Tony wasn't endorsing Buddy, but in fairness, he thought his ideas should at least be heard and talked about, and I give him a lot of credit for doing that. So here is Buddy Reamer with Tony on First Shift a few weeks ago.
I've been teasing this next segment. We're going to get to that right now. If I were to tell you that there were a candidate for the presidency that had executive experience, legislative experience, private sector experience, successfully is running a bank that is profitable, did not need the federal government to come in and bail it out, maybe a little more conservative than some of you would be comfortable with, but is level-headed, has been both a Democrat and a Republican, has served his country and his state numerous times throughout his adult life, Harvard-educated, by all intents and purposes, a serious, legitimate candidate for the presidency. Would you not say the Republicans, and by the way, he's a Republican, the Republicans would be lucky to have them based on what we currently have. Now, tomorrow, as many of you know, the Republican candidates for the presidency will be coming to Oakland University to debate. They will not have my next guest amongst them. And that person is Governor Buddy Romer. Governor, pleasure to have you on First Shift this morning.
Thank you, man. And I didn't know it was voting day in Michigan.
It is.
It's voting day in New Hampshire, too. So it seems to be a national disease, doesn't it?
Well, that's the kind of disease you want people to catch. We want
Absolutely.
People to go out and vote today, Governor. First of all, let me thank you for making the time to come on this progressive talk show today. I find that we actually have more in common than not in common. Certainly there are things that you and I could easily disagree on, but plenty of things that we could absolutely agree on. But before we get to the issues, as I set it up, you heard the way I introduced you. You've got everything the Republicans would want in a candidate. I mean everything. You've got the experience. You have a track record that you can be proud of. It's pristine. They can't come after you. You don't have sexual harassment lawsuits pending against you. You're not flip-flopping every other word. You're not being ignored, or you are being ignored. And I got to ask the question, why are the Republicans ignoring you?
Because I talk about the one issue they don't want to talk about, Tony. I talk about money. I talk about politicians with their little hands out. I talk about special deals. I come from a land of corruption. That was Louisiana 25 years ago. Hell, I appointed an inspector general. I beat a corrupt governor. I put people in jail. We cleaned that state up. It can be done. It's hard work, but it can be done. And, I consider Washington, D.C. the capital of corruption. Here's how I mean that very specifically. When a big check can come before a good idea, when special interests run the show and average people are ignored, when China can roll across our borders with their cheaply made goods by children and prisoners and nobody says a damn thing about it, this nation is in trouble.
Well, there's no question that is true, and it doesn't matter what political party you belong to. That's as applicable to the Democrats as it is to the Republicans. Nobody can deny that.
Unfortunately, and I'll give you one fact. 4 years ago, when two decent men were running for president, Obama and my man McCain, they received more money from lobbyists and PACs with Washington, D.C. addresses than 32 states combined. The 98%, the 99% have surrendered. They've given the government over to special interests. And I've been out of politics for 20 years. I don't miss politics. I like the debate. I like the combat. And I like the service. But I'm telling you, I walked out of my house and back into politics for one reason: to challenge the money that has stolen my country.
Now, listen, you have obviously attracted the attention of the alternate media, the mainstream media, to some degree has embraced you, but not in a way that you would need in order to garner the kind of national headlines that help candidates for an office like the presidency. And so I need to ask the obvious question. Is there any way, Governor Romer, that you can win the nomination of your party?
I might be the only president to win the office never having a debate. I mean, I can see President Obama and Buddy Romer having 5 or 6 hour-and-a-half or two-hour debates across the country, one in Michigan, one in the Deep South, one in the Northeast, one in the West, one in the Midwest. I can see that happening. But what I can't see happening now is me getting a chance to present my case to Republicans that our party needs to focus on reform and include others in our proposition. And secondly, that we cannot build a nation with just one party, Democrat or Republican, that we need to have a leader who is unafraid, free to lead, and reach across party lines and pull this country together. I worry about America, Tony. I think we're in serious trouble. I think the housing boom covered up our job losses for about 10 years. But it's been coming for some time, ever since Bill Clinton was president, ever since we eliminated Glass-Steagall and lost our banking system, ever since we did NAFTA. I think this country has been bleeding jobs, and I don't believe anybody's going to do a darn thing about it until they're free to lead. I start with the money, and then I go straight to the jobs.
Well, you know, and interestingly, if you take a look at the issues, and you have plenty, and the website is... I believe it's buddyromer.com, is it not?
That's right.
Yeah, just go to...
spelling Romer for me, Tony. It's R-O-E-M-E-R. That's how I survive.
Absolutely.
And we're all people going to the website.
And we're absolutely going to get that up on our Facebook page and make sure people know how to find you. If we go to the issues, and we're going to talk about some issues. If we go to the issues, one of the things we'll find out, and again, I said we're not going to agree on some things, but on a lot of things we do agree, just by virtue of what you just said, NAFTA, biggest mistake this country may have ever made.
Man. I mean, terrible. I mean, how do you give away 3 to 6 million jobs and act like it doesn't make any difference? Now, the best jobs in America in terms of building an economy, now, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a professional politician. I grow jobs. That's what I do. I became governor of Louisiana when we had an unemployment rate of 12.8%. When I got through, it was 5.6%. I know jobs. I know what companies want. They want to have some sense of confidence that the plan includes them and doesn't punish them. Small business wants a chance for some deregulation, not total deregulation. That would be stupid, just like banks need to be regulated, but some balance in regulation. These are the things we need. But NAFTA started us down a road of free trade. I am not a free trader. I'm the only person running for president who's been a congressman and a governor, and who is not a free trader. I am a fair trader, and our trade deals continue under President Obama, President Bush, and particularly President Clinton to give our jobs away and act like we're all going to benefit because the goods are cheaper. What the hell difference does it make if you don't have a job?
Yeah, you got that right. And in fact, one of the issues that I'm very passionate about, and in fact, I belong to a group that was founded by one of the UAW locals that is Fair Trade over Free Trade. And we meet every other week. In fact, we'll be going tomorrow night to protest the Republican candidates' debate because they ignore the issues that we care about. Certainly here in Michigan, Governor Romer, Fair Trade is on the front and center of every working man and woman's mind, because we understand what NAFTA did to our economy here in the state of Michigan.
Well, let me tell you, on the big issues, guys, we agree. And let me tell you why I'm not in Michigan for this debate. I mean, I love my chances in Michigan as a balanced conservative, but who is very forward-thinking on the jobs place. I mean, I've got a record to show there. The reason I'm not in Michigan is that I don't take but $100 as my maximum gift. I take no PAC money. I take no super PAC money. I fully disclose everything I receive. Now, I've done this all my life. This is not new for being president.
No, Governor, I'm Congress. I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We got to get to a break, and we got some phone calls to get to as well. Governor Buddy Romer, my guest, R-O-E-M-E-R, R-O-E-M-E-R, buddyromer.com is the website. Again, we're going to get it up on the Facebook page. We'll take a quick break here. David in San Francisco, your questions up next to the governor. A lot to do yet here. Stay where you're at. This is First Shift. I'm Tony Trupiano. We'll be back on 1310 WDTW.
It's First Shift with Tony Trupiano.
Welcome back. 22 minutes after 7 o'clock on this election Thursday. My guest, Governor Buddy Romer, he is a Republican presidential candidate for the presidency of this great United States of America. And he is, again, you can find him online at buddyromer.com, R-O-E-M-E-R. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. What I care about is that you have an open mind. If you go to his website, you're going to find that a lot of the issues, we're going to get to some of them in just a minute, a lot of the issues that the governor likes to talk about will resonate with you no matter what political party you belong to, which, again, makes me scratch my head a little bit. If I were a Republican operative, I would want a Governor Romer to be out and about, out in front, because they could probably listen to this, folks, and as a hardcore Democrat, they'd have a tough time. Obama have a tough time beating Governor Romer. I'm telling you, he's that interesting. Governor, we've got
a hell of a race.
Well, it would be a hell of a race. God knows that's true. Let's go to the phones and welcome David in San Francisco. David, welcome to First Shift. You're on the air with Governor Buddy Romer.
Yeah, morning, Tony and Governor. You know, in history, the looting of America has happened probably, 20, 30 times. I'm a baby boomer, so it's happened at least four or five times. Jimmy Carter during Reagan, during the first Bush, during the subprime, and now currently, and of course we've got Enron examples, and there have really never been prosecutions of these old boys, and I'm just wondering, do you have historical examples that you can give us of successes and what you would tangibly do? I'm struck by the news up in Detroit there. They're planning on bulldozing 30,000 houses. Now, if I understand right, these are houses that the banks can't find title to. And so as part of the settlement for not having title to houses that they sold illegally, they're going to bulldoze the houses. Now, why is it that America has to watch its assets be bulldozed rather than allowing people who got cheated of those houses the right to move in and become taxpayers again?
All right, David, let's give the governor a chance to answer that. Thank you for your call, David. Go ahead, Governor Romer.
The big banks control Washington, David. You understand, don't you? There's 7,400 banks in America. They're 19 on Wall Street. They have 80% of all the deposits. They have formed an oligopoly. Not quite a monopoly, but pretty close. And presidents depend on their election from the Wall Street checks. I mean, let's pick on this president, but I could pick on any. Maybe I should pick on Bill Clinton. Let's start with Bill, because I know Bill well. He was governor of Arkansas when I was governor of Louisiana. We were the two youngest governors in America. We tried to work together. I just couldn't count on what he said, but that's another story. When Bill becomes president of the United States, he works like a tiger to eliminate Glass-Steagall. That's a Franklin Roosevelt initiative passed by two congressmen from Virginia and Alabama, Glass and Steagall. What it did was it said that banks could not merge investment banks with commercial banks. It limited the size of banks without ever naming a number. And it spread the risk in banking. Well, guess who did away with it in 1999? Bill Clinton, with the help of the Republicans in the Congress. So there were both parties working together to get the funds from the banks. The banks loved it. They got huge. They doubled, and they doubled again. They got paid more. They had big bonuses. Oh, yeah, they took risks. And the housing boom hid the risk they took. And then the day came it was called, and George W. Bush was then president. And what was his answer? Did he reinstall Glass-Steagall? Oh, no. Did he cause banks to have to put up more capital to keep their size? Oh, no. Did he do away with too big to fail? Oh, no. He bailed them out. Then here comes President Obama, president number three on my list of culprits. He signed a bank reform bill, Dodd-Frank. It didn't eliminate too big to fail. It didn't reinstall Glass-Steagall. It didn't increase capital ratios as banks got bigger. It did none of those things. Obama signs it. The next week he goes to Wall Street. He has a fundraiser at $35,800 a ticket. And guess who the host is? Goldman Sachs. David, we have never seen a rape and pillage like we are seeing over the last 10 or 15 years. And it's like Tony said, if you'll let me say it too, it's not one party. It's both parties. And you know why? Because they get their money from those corporate kings. That's how they get their money. And so I run for president not having all the solutions, although I like my jobs idea. I like small business. I like energy independence. I like America being strong again and not being the policeman of the world. I like that. But my key is a president needs to be free. Goldman Sachs does not need to run Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. has been corrupted by the money. We need to clean it out. When you think of me, I want you to think of a broom. That's what I do.
You know, Governor Romer, I got to tell you, if there are Occupy Wall Street people listening to the show right now, and I know there are, they'd like you. They would like you a whole lot.
I've been to Occupy Wall Street, Tony. I'm the only candidate that walked down Wall Street and spent a half a day listening to the young people on Occupy Wall Street. I've been there. No other candidate has been there in either party. The reason I went was I know the power of young people. I remember it growing up in the Deep South on a farm when my daddy had a cross burned in his yard. We were a Methodist family who believed that all citizens ought to be treated fairly and properly and respected, and we were disowned in our community, and we would not back down, and young people changed America. I remember being at Harvard, that's a small school in Boston, studying economics when the Vietnam War came, and the kids rioted in the streets. They protested in the streets, and eventually they stopped that war. I went to Occupy Wall Street for two reasons. One, I respect the power of young people, and politicians ought to learn to listen. And number two, I think they are exactly right on the issue.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
And joining us now is Cheryl Witten, the president of the Michigan Advisory Board for Blessings in a Backpack.
Blessings in a Backpack is a national organization. This teacher was concerned because she had kids in her school who came back from the weekend tired and hungry and by no means ready to learn. These children are on the free and reduced lunch program during school week, but no one thought, what happens to these children when they go home on Friday? So came up with the very simple idea, let's pack a backpack with food to take home with them on Friday, and they would return their backpack on Monday to be refilled.
All right, so if I contact Blessings in a Backpack, MI.org, how do I get involved?
There is a page to make a donation, and then we as the Michigan Board will determine where the greatest need is.
Blessings in a Backpack, MI.org.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Recently on First Shift.
Just joining me now is Jerry Persaud, the Senior Vice President of Advancement at Gleaners Community Food Bank.
Probably the single biggest thing that's happening is happening at the federal level now, and that's looking at the food stamp program. In 2006, there were 26.5 million people participating in the food stamp program. Then you had the economic decrease, and in 2011, there were 44.2 million. That's a huge increase in the number of people seeking food help. And so if you cut that program by 10%, the jobs aren't there for people. What are they going to do? That will have a tremendous impact on what's going to happen at our local level.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on 1310 WDTW.
Happy Thanksgiving, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano, and I'm Jeff Radford. Well, if you've been watching the news, you can't escape coverage of the GOP debates. And when the candidates came to Michigan for a debate, Congressman Gary Peters came on the show to give a preview and to talk about what he expected to hear from the candidates. Very interesting indeed to hear what he said before the debate and how the talk about the auto companies actually did turn out.
Congressman Gary Peters, I want to welcome you back to First Shift. Talk a little bit about the debate. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Let's talk a little bit about this quote-unquote debate tonight. We've really got a little bit of a mess here, don't we?
We do. Certainly, when we're looking at the debate, I certainly want to hear some answers to questions, and in particular, dealing with the auto industry. You know, everybody on that stage has said that it was wrong for what the president did, which was to step in and help the auto industry get back on its feet and survive. The president took an awful lot of heat, as you know, and he did that because he believed that by standing with the American worker that we would be successful. And certainly that rescue package for the auto industry, which is, in my mind, was a victim of what happened on Wall Street. And when you have unbridled greed on Wall Street that brought our country to its knees, we could have lost a key manufacturing component of this country, which is the auto industry. In fact, I don't believe you could even have really any kind of manufacturing industry here in the United States if you don't have a vibrant domestic auto industry. So it was critical to do, and not only was it critical to do, it's been a great success. And Republicans on that stage were naysayers from day one and continue to think that it was the wrong thing. And you know, I think it's going to be interesting having them here in Michigan, the very part of the auto industry, to try to explain their positions, because I think they'll have difficulty doing that, and hopefully the American people will see through that.
Well, they'll literally be able to see from the parking lot the world headquarters of Chrysler. I mean, literally, they can see an institution that wouldn't exist today if we would have followed, especially Mitt Romney's advice, which was let them go bankrupt.
Absolutely. In fact, I remember very vividly an experience that I had as a new member of Congress in 2009 in the midst of what was happening when I got sworn into office, where this country was losing 800,000 jobs a month. We were hemorrhaging jobs. The economy was spinning down. I was in that headquarters, the Chrysler headquarters, which is actually the second largest building next to the Pentagon in the country. And sitting in that building was Mr. Nardelli, who was the CEO, and he said in no uncertain terms, if we don't have government assistance to get us through this reorganization, that he was going to have to liquidate the company. There was simply no way for him to get the resources he needed because Wall Street was frozen, the capital markets, all that was in complete disarray, that he would have to liquidate the company. And as I looked around that room, people's faces just turned white as they saw that their careers disappearing and really those tens of thousands of families that would have been in a terrible situation had that happened. And I kept thinking, you know, here I am in this large building, and I could just have these visions of grass growing in the parking lot and how tragic that would be. But the president stepped up, and my colleagues in the Democratic coalition in Congress stepped up to make sure that they got those resources. And now we can fast forward as you are standing there looking at the Chrysler headquarters. Chrysler is now in a situation where they need additional real estate because they're hiring another 1,000 engineers. They can't put all those people in that very large building. That, to me, is an incredible success story. We were looking over the cliff into the abyss, and now we're adding jobs and growing an industry that's critical, not just for Michigan, but for the entire country.
Well, Congressman Peters, there's no question everything you've said is definitively true, and I shudder at the thought. I mean, you know, there are so many different ways we could take a look at this from a legacy standpoint, but let's keep it simple. My neighbors, the very people that you and I live next door to, would not either be here today or have that job or would be in foreclosure on top of the way we've already been burdened in Southeast Michigan. The thought that somebody can run for the presidency of this country and then come into the state that literally defines what manufacturing means with some kind of bravado that, you know, their plan would have been better somehow. I just don't understand how they can look anybody in the eye while they're here today with any kind of sincerity.
I agree, Tony. And you know, what it shows is that they've got this this adherence to this rigid ideology. They don't want to let facts get in the way of their ideology. And the facts, I think, are very, very clear. This is about practical problem solving for a crisis that we were facing. And I think, you know, the point that you make is very important, is that as we're talking about jobs at Chrysler and General Motors, it's not just the jobs of those companies. It's all of the auto suppliers and all of the indirect jobs that those folks spend their money, whether it's restaurants or hair salons or your grocery stores, you know, all across the board. It would have just been devastating for the Michigan economy. But more importantly, going forward, and I think, you know, that we've got to focus on that, is that we've got to have manufacturing policy in this country. We've got to be focused on manufacturing. Those are good-paying jobs. Those are critical to the American middle class. The one thing that I'm focused on is the fact that the American middle class has been under assault over the last three decades. The American middle class has been stagnant, while most of the wealth in this country has been concentrated at the very top. You can't have a vibrant democracy in that kind of environment. You certainly can't have a strong economy. Middle-class workers need to have money that they can spend in the economy, and that's how you have a stronger economy. It's when we have fair distribution of the benefits of this economy.
Well, one of the things that we just had Stephen Henderson on from the Detroit Free Press, Congressman Peters, and we were talking about all these millages that passed all over the state of Michigan yesterday. And certainly in southeast Michigan, the vast majority of them passed because people have said, I'm willing to pay more taxes if I get something of value in return. Will the Republicans please pay attention to what happened in Michigan yesterday?
They need to, and that's the services that are so important, that are critical for an economy. People need, and we know we need good quality schools. You need to have roads. You've got to have that kind of infrastructure in place, and that's why I am so frustrated in Congress, and will continue to fight the Republicans to get a jobs bill. What folks need now are jobs. You've got a Republican majority in the House that refuse to put forward a jobs bill that will improve our schools, put people back to work, make sure we've got roads and bridges that are not crumbling. Those are the kind of investments that the American people understand we need to make, that in order to grow a country, for a country to prosper, it requires investments in the future. You just can't cut your way to prosperity. You need to invest.
Congressman Gary Peters, again, my guest. Before I let you go, just for, if you would, 60 seconds, I want to thank you for the EAT Act, or the Eliminate the Auto Test Act. I also want to thank you for stepping up and sending Governor Snyder a letter that said that we harm children by asset testing using needed vehicles to decide whether or not somebody needs food assistance. Thank you so much for your leadership in that area.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I just thought that was unbelievable that you had a situation where people were going to be forced to choose between an automobile and food. And given our public transit systems here that are woefully inadequate for most people in this area, you need a car in order to get to a job. You need a car to get your child to a doctor. It's just an essential thing. And then to force people to sell their automobiles in order for them to get food assistance when people are down and are struggling made no sense whatsoever. So we fought that hard, and luckily the governor came at least partway and has loosened up that rule somewhat to make sure that people are not faced with that intolerable choice between food and an automobile necessary for them to get to their job.
No question. Congressman, thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry about the snafu a little earlier, but we got you on. That's the important thing. God bless you, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, it's always a privilege to be on your show. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Congressman Gary Peters once again.
And that'll do it for the second hour of this Thanksgiving Day edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Truppiano. Very unique and dynamic interview centering around Michigan and the issues we face. But in the third and final hour of today's show, I want to bring to you the interview Tony did a while back with director and producer Tom Shadyac, well known for his movies like Liar Liar and such. He actually created a documentary called I Am, and you'll hear why we thought so highly of it and Mr. Shadyac coming up next. Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for listening. I'm Jeff Bradford, and we'll be back after we get some headline news from CNN.
Over 140 Rite Aid stores are unionized, with over 1,500 United Food and Commercial Workers members working with a union contract in stores all across Michigan. Because they are union members, they have access to higher wages, a company pension, a health care plan for themselves and their family. And UFCW Rite Aid workers proudly serve their communities and at the same time enjoy a living wage and benefit package. Please support our union Rite Aid workers and make sure they know how much we appreciate the work they are doing. To join the UFCW family of drugstores, visit
UFCW.org or call 248-585-9671.
The following letters were written by our troops.
My dear fellow Americans, I truly appreciate your support. I was starting to wonder if people had forgotten about us over here, but then one of my buddies showed me this website, and now as tears are streaming down my face, I can see for sure that you haven't. Private Emily B., U.S. Army.
It's so heartwarming to see the American people not letting the men and women of the armed forces be forgotten. Your letters make a group of grown men, battle-hardened and gruff, act like a bunch of kids around a Christmas tree. Thanks. Staff Sergeant Matthew H., U.S. Army.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. But don't take our word for it. Take theirs. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's Jeff from First Shift with Tony Trupiano. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. right here on 1310 WDTW.
Dearborn, Detroit.
Now, time for news from CNN.
CNN Radio, I'm Jim Riddle. Top story this hour, a twin-engine plane carrying as many as six people crashed last night in the Superstition Mountains east of Phoenix. Local resident Luis Ruiz saw it hit a mountainside.
It hit the flat iron up there and just exploded. It's exactly what I've seen. It looked like napalm in the morning.
Authorities say three children and three adults were aboard. No sign of survivors. American Airlines flight turned back and made a safe emergency landing at Los Angeles International Airport last night. The crew had smelled something burning in the cockpit. The plane had taken off from LAX heading to New York's JFK when it reversed course. Those three American students detained for allegedly tossing Molotov cocktails in the protests in Cairo, Egypt, have been released. At least 38 people were killed this week in the protests there. Egypt's military supreme council issued an apology on Facebook for the loss of life. U.S. troops in Afghanistan are being well-fed on this Thanksgiving. CNN's Nick Payton Walsh is at Bagram Air Base, where an amazing amount of food is being served.
Thanksgiving and its celebration provides a few hours and certainly several thousand calories worth of relief for many soldiers from the conflict here. We've just been to quite remarkable dinner here. Remarkable amount of beef available to them, a joint the size of which I've never seen before being cut up for some very grateful soldiers here.
Actress Sienna Miller testified to a British hearing today that it was terrifying to be hounded by press photographers. That hearing's part of the investigation into press ethics and practices. She described being chased in the dark by packs of men trying to take her photograph. The judge says former British newspaper editor and current CNN program host Piers Morgan also will be called to testify. Producers of an album say some big names in music and art are signing on to the Occupy Wall Street movement. Those include musicians David Crosby, Graham Nash, Jackson Brown, and Devo, and filmmaker Michael Moore. The producers say all proceeds from the album will benefit the Occupy movement. This is CNN Radio.
Starting tomorrow at 5 a.m., get an LG front-load washer or dryer at the Home Depot for just $549 each. That's $900 off the pair. That's also just one example of the Black Friday savings all over the store. The LG washer and dryer have extra-large capacity. They're extra quiet. And at just $549 each, they're extra affordable. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Through November 28th, while supplies last, U.S. only. See store for details.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
This Thanksgiving weekend at Ace.
The weekend is coming!
Start crossing off your holiday shopping list with $50 off a DeWalt 18-volt cordless drill, now just $99.99.
The weekend is coming!
So visit your local Ace and get saving, then get your weekend back. At Ace, the helpful place. Price good at participating Ace stores November 25th through 27th. Limited quantities available while supplies last.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
See store for details.
It's nearly here, and almost before you can get the Thanksgiving leftovers into the fridge, it'll be time to scoop up some Black Friday bargains. Electronics are high on our gift list this holiday season, as they are in most years. Jim Barry is with the Consumer Electronics Association.
About a third of all gifts will be consumer electronics gifts. A couple reasons for that. One, there's something in just about every price range. There's terrific value. The prices keep getting lower on this stuff, and then they're really cool.
Tablet computers lead the list, and unlike a year ago, it's not just about the iPad.
This year you have choices in screen sizes, 10 inches, 8 inches, 7 inches. You have choices in operating systems, and then you have a lot of choices in price now.
The CEA's gift list has changed a lot in the 18 years it's been compiled. Back in the beginning, TVs were on top, followed by VCRs. What's a VCR? I'm Larry Kofsky at the MarketWatch.com Wall Street Bureau.
Blurriness, wavy lines, blind spot, these are all symptoms of a chronic condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, also known as wet AMD. It can develop quickly, and it's a leading cause of blindness in people 60 and older. Learn about your risk factors and find out how a retina specialist can help. Just visit AMDAwareness.org. And if you aren't seeing clearly, get checked now. Knowing the symptoms may save your sight. Learn more at AMDAwareness.org today. This message was brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech.
You hear that? That's the sound of 68 million shopping carts being filled, 275,000 homes being built. Yep, that's the sound of a CSX train doing its part to move the economy forward. Sounds pretty good. CSX trains are the most efficient way to bring goods to market. See how at CSX.com. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Starting tomorrow at 5 a.m., get an LG front-load washer or dryer at the Home Depot for just $549 each. That's $900 off the pair. That's also just one example of the Black Friday savings all over the store. The LG washer and dryer have extra-large capacity. They're extra quiet. And at just $549 each, they're extra affordable. More saving. More doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Through November 28th, while supplies last, U.S. only. See store for details.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
This Thanksgiving weekend at Ace.
The weekend is coming!
Start crossing off your holiday shopping list with $50 off a DeWalt 18-volt cordless drill, now just $99.99.
The weekend is coming!
So visit your local Ace and get saving, then get your weekend back. At Ace, the helpful place. Price good at participating Ace stores November 25th through 27th. Limited quantities available while supplies last.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
See store for details.
Change mandates vision. Vision mandates intelligence. Intelligence mandates thought, and thought demands attention. As we look for leadership that demonstrates courage and conscience, we ask the deliberate question that provides the path to truth. That question is, are you ready for change? And if you are you ready for First Shift with Tony Trupiano?
Oh, you have to be ready by now. Welcome back and happy Thanksgiving. This is the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano, and playing the part of your host is me this morning, Jeff Radford, normally referred to as the producer extraordinaire. And alongside Anthony Trupiano in the control room, we hold down the fort with how the show sounds. Behind and around Tony, you know, the commercials, the ins and outs, the music, all of the elements. And once in a while, you know, if you get up early enough, you'll hear us chime in, or even towards the end of the show, we get to throw our two cents in occasionally. Before we get back, though, to the best clips, I have to say one thing I am thankful for is having a great job like this. Having met Tony and working for not just a radio show like this, but a movement. You know, getting to know people through Facebook or email, or knowing that we can make a difference in people's lives, and vice versa, too. I can vouch for people making a difference in our lives as well. Whether you agree or disagree with us, you still matter to us. We're very thankful for, you know, the Amirs, the Toms, the Charleses, the Lees, the Steves, the Dorises, the Patties, everyone we've gotten to know, and even those of you who have only just recently started participating in the show, very thankful for you guys. However, it's interviews like the one I'm about to play for you that I'm sure you're thankful for, and so here we go. Tom Shadyac is a very famous director, and he made sure he made time for First Shift to talk about his film, I Am. And the things that came out of this interview made it one that I wanted to make sure that I brought it to you again this morning. So, Tony, take it away.
What we're going to do in this hour is very different than what we normally do, and so I'm going to ask all of you, I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on today, to kind of take a step back from our big bad selves. That's all of us, me included. And listen, and perhaps you will learn something, because we're going to have a very uncommon dialogue this morning. We're going to talk to a man in just a minute who is certainly considered a genius in his field. He's a writer, actor, producer. He is responsible for films like The Nutty Professor and Bruce Almighty and Patch Adams and Accepted. I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. And he also is responsible for an extraordinary documentary that you, the audience, came to me with and said, Tony, you have got to see this documentary titled I Am. And it's not that I was ignoring you. I was busy. And one a listener in particular, Joe Hicks, who will be calling in a little bit later, he was originally hoping to be with me in studio today because this documentary, I think, changed his life as it did mine. And you'll find out why as we work our way through the hour. But it was you folks that reached out to me and really shook my cage and knew that this was something that I needed to see, that I needed to experience. And although in the 77 minutes of film that became the documentary I Am, for some people, and it's like one of those wonderful things where, it, you know, it's that old saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. This film has so many different messages that for the same 10 people to watch it, it could easily get 10 very different and incredible messages from it. So let me bring on to the show right now Tom Shadyac, the writer and director of an amazing documentary titled I Am. And Tom, I want to thank you for getting up with us awfully early for you and joining us on First Shift this morning.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It is early out here in Los Angeles, but it's a beautiful morning. So thanks for having us on.
Well, I appreciate it. Of course, before we go any further, I need to thank our mutual friend and my dear friend, Tom Hartman, who connected me to Harold, your media guy. And that's how we all got here today. Tom Hartman, and in, by the way, this beautiful film I Am. Tom is just an amazing. I've known Tom for many, many years, and he has actually... Tom, very, very much responsible for helping to mentor me and to shape me into the talk show host I am today.
Well, he was one of my mentors as well. What you said earlier in the introduction, when the student is ready, the teacher appears, and Tom was definitely a teacher for me. It's funny, when I first met Tom, I had no idea what his political leanings were. I read him and met him on principles alone, and the principles I found there really helped to wake me up and to change me. So Tom is one of those wonderfully researched, incredibly intelligent men that is helping us to reawaken to a new way.
No question. He also is heard on this very station. Of course, Tom is nationally syndicated and is heard noon here on the station. Tom Shadyac, again, my guest. I want to play just the opening... a little opening salvo from the documentary I Am. Jeff, go ahead and play that audio.
My name is Tom Shadyac. I'm a movie director. Facing my own death brought an instant sense of clarity and purpose. Euphoria. I decided to grab a camera and a film crew of four and start a journey. To spark a conversation around challenging and rarely asked questions. Have you ever seen any of my movies? Do you ever see Ace Ventura?
Ace Ventura? Do you ever hear that movie? It's a Jim Carrey movie.
No. We are asking some of today's significant minds, what's wrong with our world and what can we do about it? We started by asking what's wrong with the world, and we ended up discovering what's right with it.
And that is the beginning of this extraordinary 77 minutes of film. Now, Tom Shadyac, I have to tell you that, you know, we could do that typical interview thing where, you know, you're the multimillionaire director, very successful, worked for Bob Hope. All that's true, that, you know, you've, you know, you're in the process of, you know, giving it away and, you know, funding wonderful things. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But really, I think this is an amazing opportunity, as I said, to have an uncommon dialogue today about the things that we know are right. We spend so much time talking about what is wrong that I think the greater messages of life are getting lost. And I'm as guilty of that as anybody, so I'll wear that myself, okay? I mean, I'm happy to do that because, you know, it's part of who I am. I'm sometimes angry. I don't like being angry sometimes, But I also understand that I have an important responsibility as a communicator on a daily basis to get information out to people. And so sometimes my passion, or we'll call that anchor, but my passion sometimes gets in the way of message. So I have to ask you, as you had, and I do want to talk about the accident, because I think that that's a pivotal part of why you have catapulted into this entirely new universe for you. So talk about that biking accident and how that changed you.
Well, the biking accident was pivotal for one key part of my journey, and that was making this movie. Now, I had already started shifting. It's one of the things that maybe I didn't communicate as well as I could have in the film. I had been starting this shift 10 to 15 years ago. I had begun to wake up to principles, again, that shocked me. I had no idea the way things work, if you will, the way we work, the way reality works. I began reading things like Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight from Tom Hartman, People's History from Howard Zinn, etc. So I began shifting and, you know, understanding that I was using far too many resources and that I was potentially a part of the problem and not a part of the solution, not as much a part of the solution as I certainly wanted to be. And what happened was when, so I'd already even moved into the mobile home park. For those of you who haven't seen the film, I've shifted and downsized quite a bit from a very large estate to a beautiful mobile home park. No one should feel sorry for me, but it's very much out of the vision of what we call successful in our culture. But I didn't have the courage to talk about it. And so I had made all these shifts, was in process of giving much of my money away, and I was sort of doing it alone and in the closet, if you will. And the bike accident, which gave me post-concussion syndrome, and I truly faced what I thought was my own death. I thought it was over for me, my last chapter. And when I faced my last chapter, I said I didn't want to die with these ideas inside of me. I wanted to share them. I wanted to offer them to people, my journey to people, to see if it wouldn't be a part of their own, be a part of their own journey in shifting how they were walking in the world, the way they considered doing business with each other, relationships, etc. Because it affects everything. You know, these principles that awoke in me, it affects everything. So that was the shift, really, from the bike accident. But the shift was a much larger shift that had taken place classically over a long, long period of time.
You know, it's interesting as I and I know that I think it's fair for me to say that you're not a labels guy. You don't like labels, but I have to give you one because there is something that happened to me as I was watching I Am. I saw was this amazing, you have a gift. There's no question you have a gift. You're a storyteller. You're an amazing storyteller, but that's not the label I want to put on you. And at this point, I think that you're very much a guide, but that's not even the label I want to put on you. What I think, Tom Shadyac, more than anything, is that you've now become one of the messengers. Not unlike the people that you sought out and featured in this wonderful film. You have evolved into one of them, whether you realize that or not.
Well, if it's true that the word guide is appropriate for me, I feel that I am being guided by something. None of this is ever about me and my name and any of that stuff. It's really about the principles that are animating me, and that's all I want to really talk about with people. It's not about me and, oh, you gave this away or you did that. There's so much more that, you know, I'm walking into and learning and doing every day. So I'm walking it imperfectly, but the principles, the things that are guiding me, animating me, moving in me, that's really where the power is. And that's what everyone is a part of. So while I appreciate that, I believe that what is guiding me is the message. I believe that what is guiding me are those same principles that animated those that we hold most powerful in our culture, you know, from a Jesus to a Gandhi to a king to a person who's just devoted their life to, you know, love and service. Yeah, that's kind of my point of view about it. And And I think it's how we keep from dividing each other. It's really not about any Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, Tom Shadyac, this person, that person. It's about these things, this idea, you know, with a capital I.
Yeah, well, we're going to come take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this idea. We're going to get into some specifics. I Am The Doc is the website you want to go to, IamTheDoc.com. That's IamTheDoc.com. We'll get it up on our Facebook page. If you'd like to join us, 888-552-3595. I am Tony Trupiano. We'll also take your questions via email, tony@thetonyshow.org. We'll take the break and be back. Stay with us.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
And joining us now is Cheryl Witten, the president of the Michigan Advisory Board for Blessings in a Backpack.
Blessings in a Backpack is a national organization. This teacher was concerned because she had kids in her school who came back from the weekend tired and hungry and by no means ready to learn. These children are on the free and reduced lunch program during school week, but no one thought, what happens to these children when they go home on Friday? So came up with a very simple idea. Let's pack a backpack with food to take home with them on Friday, and they would return their backpack on Monday to be refilled.
All right, so if I contact blessingsinabackpackmi.org, how do I get involved?
There is a page to make a donation, and then we as the Michigan Board will determine where the greatest need is.
Blessingsinabackpackmi.org.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hiller's, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs, which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Trupiano, or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310WDTW.com today.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310WDTW.
Director, well known for the work he's done, becoming wider known for a documentary titled I Am. It was one of those movies that is almost viral in nature, Finding Me the Way Great Movies Find People, by others who saw it and were changed by it. And in fact, Tom Shadyac, the person that originally told me about this is a listener by the name of Joe Hicks, and Joe happens to be on hold. He was hoping to be in studio with me today, but could not. But let me bring Joe into the conversation and introduce the two of you to each other. Tom, meet Joe. Joe, meet Tom.
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Joe, I thank you for being head of our marketing department.
Well, I don't think it really needs any help.
We do. We do, actually.
Thank you for making the film.
You're welcome.
It's
Look, we really do need help.
Totally changed my life.
Oh, thank you, brother. I'm so happy. That's the ultimate, you know, for a person who puts out a piece of work into the world, that it's touched somebody. But we really do need people like you, Joe. I mean, this is, as Tony said, how a movie like this gets out there. All my other films, Bruce Almighty had, you know, tens of millions of dollars behind it, $30-40 million in the marketing department, and we have you. So I'll take you every day, Joe. So
thank you.
We appreciate you.
Joe, did you have any? Go ahead, Joe. Did you have a specific question you wanted to ask Tom?
Yeah, I had a couple questions. I was going to ask him how much books like, you know, Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight influenced the movie, but I already got my answer to that. So I also wanted to ask, did you know when you were making this film that it would be the perfect antidote to Atlas Shrugged? And did you know it would be coming out around the same time?
I'm sorry, the perfect antidote to what?
Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, Atlas Shrugged, I see. Well, I was certainly familiar with Atlas Shrugged and Ayn Rand's work. I'd tried to read The Fountainhead several times because it had moved friends of mine, and I found a philosophy that I very much part with, and I really couldn't get through it. I read it, you know, I think I read the first 100 pages three times and just couldn't bust through the rest of it. But no, I didn't make it with that intention at all. Again, it wasn't to be as much counter anything as it was to be for something. You know, I think that one way we change things is to offer a vision of the world that's sexier, if you will, that's more beautiful, that's more enjoyable, that's more powerful. So, you know, I wanted to offer these principles, which are the beginning of a vision, I think, that can really work for everybody.
Okay. And do you think the mental illness in the world is still growing, or do you think that with like movements like the Arab Spring and Occupy, that it's receding and that love and cooperation are growing?
I actually think that love and cooperation are growing and have been growing for a long time, and that's why you see movements, even certain movements that are angry, you know, that have a lot of anger in them, that may be counter movements, because, you know, the saying is when a body is dying off, it kicks the hardest. You know, if you look at a book like Empathic Civilization by Jeremy Rifkin, he looks at the history of our species and shows this, that empathy really is the truest story that you can tell, empathy and cooperation about our species. And then he goes to a number of things. You know, we all think war is increasing. Well, it's actually decreasing. You know, we look at something that we take for granted, at least in our country, that women have the right to vote, and we're close to giving them an equal participation in our culture. We're not quite there yet, but just, you know, 80 or 100 years ago, they couldn't vote. They were originally, you know, viewed as, you know, almost property of the men, and the same thing with African Americans. And those things have all shifted, you know, and it kind of goes by, you know. I was on the freeway the other day coming home, and it hit me. Like, nobody sees the, even driving, as one incredible act of cooperation. You think about how many cooperative acts have to go into just driving home. It's incredible that everybody stays in their lane relatively, you know, everybody's going relatively the speed limit, what they've been told, they've registered their cars, they've gotten their smog checked or whatever the rules are. We're all cooperating. Even when we compete with each other, people don't realize how much we're in cooperation. Just to see a race, you know, man against man, are hundreds of thousands of acts of cooperation where people have decided, okay, these are going to be the rules, and we're going to meet at this time, and we're going to make this deal with this network to broadcast it, and we're going to drive and get in the car, and we're going to all have some food together. It's all cooperation, you know. But we tell the story, right, of the aberration, you know, and that's where we have to just look. These, we're telling the story of what's not our basis, because it's the aberration. We tell the story of the car that's stolen, not all of the driving that's in cooperation.
Right.
Jeff,
thank you so much for coming on, and thanks for making the film. You're amazing. Joe, the film's amazing. And
I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you, brother. I hope to meet you someday. You're the reason we did this, and we feel that something is happening because it's touching folks like you. So thank you, man.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much. And I appreciate you turning me on to this movie. You know, Tom, I've got to tell you, the Occupy movements that are happening all over the country right now fit very neatly into a lot of the message that I Am conveys. And you speak and you capture in a remarkable way this consensus decision-making that you talk about. And that is, that really does encapsulate what you call the counter-protest that's going on right now. This Occupy movement very much is about consensus building. It's the very foundation of what they are beginning to, I mean, we're talking about a movement that's less than 8 weeks old, and yet in that short amount of time, because of this vibration, this spiritual energy that I don't think people even recognize what it is yet, it has brought us to a place very quickly that we wouldn't have a year ago thought possible.
Yeah, well, you know, Occupy Wall Street obviously is a movement that is being, it's being fueled by a problem that we all can feel. Even those who oppose the Occupy Wall Street movement, I think, can feel that there's something off. There's something broken in our economy. There's something off when so many people can't afford basic, medical coverage and to feed their families. And the movement speaks very well to that, that something is off. And I think the movement is still forming and finding, again, that more beatific vision. I don't think the problem exists personally simply in Wall Street. I think Wall Street is a manifestation of each of our own, the energy that's in each of us. When we heal that energy, the manifestation that is Wall Street, I think, will lose its power and diminish. Wall Street only is fueled by us. It's fueled by our investments. It's fueled by what we care about. And when we shift what we care about, what we invest in, whether it's with our money or our time or our talent, Wall Street is going to shift. It's only an outgrowth of that energy.
All right.
And the energy for so long has been, how much can I get?
And we have to take a quick break here. Tom Shadyk, stay where you're at. We will come back. There's so much more to get to. IamTheDoc.com.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best Of First Shift with Tony Truppiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Recently on First Shift.
Joining me now is Jerry Persan, the Senior Vice President of Advancement at Gleaners Community Food Bank.
Probably the single biggest thing that's happening is happening at the federal level now, and that's looking at the food stamp program. In 2006, there were 26.5 million people participating in the food stamp program. Then you had the economic decrease, and in 2011, there were 44.2 million. That's a huge increase in the number of people seeking food help. And so if you cut that program by 10%, the jobs aren't there for people. What are they going to do? That will have a tremendous impact on what's going to happen at our local level.
First Shift with Tony Truppiano on 1310 WDTW.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best Of First Shift with Tony Truppiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Director, producer Tom Shadyk is with me. His documentary, I Am, I believe I Am is an opportunity. Well, it's beyond an opportunity. I believe that it is a critical piece of a puzzle that is not really that difficult. It's like one of those kids' puzzles that has big pieces to it, and you can look at all the pieces and see what the picture is. Here's what I Am does that no other documentary or film that I've ever experienced does. It gives us an opportunity to explore the sense of optimism that's in all of us. I think Tom Shadyk, what really, what profoundly affected me, I've watched it now four times, and I think it's one of those movies that you need to watch again and again and again because you grow from each viewing. From each viewing, you come to accept or understand something that you either didn't understand before, or it just kind of sprouts something in you, and that's really what it does for me. And so, as I looked at this film and wondered, what do you do with this? You know, Tom, for years I would go to film festivals with my radio show, and I would interview all these wonderful directors and movie stars, and it was always the documentary people that I would end up hanging out with in the bar at the end of the day when everything else is done, because these were the people that couldn't put it away. They couldn't, put it on a shelf at the end of the day and move on. Is I Am one of those movies that never will never completely be done for you, if you understand what I mean by that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because it is, I am, as the title suggests, is about taking responsibility for the energy that you put out in the world and your participation in helping to heal this world and creating something new. So, you know, we had a very similar journey. I used to go to this film festival, which really helped to wake me up. It's called Mountain Film and Telluride. And it's a documentary film festival. And I, of course, have been to, you know, other narrative film festivals because I'm in the narrative world, making Ace Ventura, Nutty Professor, Liar Liar, etc. And this documentary film festival was so full of passion, and the people were doing such good work. The filmmakers weren't just making films, quote-unquote. They were doing the work. They were out there helping to heal, you know, disparities of wealth and helping to heal places of the in the natural world that had been poisoned. And it was their life. And it was that unification, that integrity that so moved me. And I hope that that is what I represent now, is a life that is more unified. And it's not over. I'll hang this phone up, and I'm going to start writing a book that are about these principles. And I'll be speaking somewhere shortly that is are about these principles. And the films that I'm trying to make now in my business are, again, about these principles.
Well, and certainly none of that comes as a surprise to me. I have to, you know, and this, by the way, this film is filled with remarkable people. And the reason that I'm not getting into some of the nitty-gritty, and folks, I want you to experience this movie for the first time whole. I want it to be something that you just, I'm asking you to trust me. Watch, you know, get the movie, watch the movie, and experience this movie. There's so much there that to give any of it away seems to me to be cheating you. That's just the way I feel. But, Tom Shadyk, I have to ask you a question, because one of the things that I got out of this, and one of the things that kind of has been pushing inside of me, you know, is that thing that we call truth. What does truth mean to you?
Wow.
Well, you didn't say, at least you know I was paying attention.
We'll be back with the meaning of life after this. You know, it's one of those things like the scent of a rose that's very hard to describe, but I think we know it when we experience it. So when I say love is the most powerful force in the universe, I believe I'm espousing a truth. And again, it's one of those things that may sound utopian, and yet we've all experienced it. We all experienced 9/11, which was an act with so much hate and division behind it. And I won't get into why that act happened, but the love that came out of that act was so tangibly more powerful for me than the hate that went in. New York was just thick in the air with love. I was there shortly thereafter, and I lost friends in 9/11. And it was so thick and palpable, and the beauty that was being born from that fertilizer, if you will, that hateful act, that to me is a truth. And it's a truth that I think, because of the vision of society we have today, that we're all broken, we are told that by our religions, that we're all competitive, that it's a dog-eat-dog world, we miss that truth. So I think a truth is something that, the truth is something that created everything. You know, I think it was Thoreau that said, above everything, give me truth. Even above love, because love is truth. So truth, I think we know it when we experience it.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Tom, because as I was exploring the movie I Am, because it's something that you don't just watch. It kind of explores you, and you explore it. You have a relationship with this film that isn't like anything I have ever seen. And the more you watch it, the greater that relationship seems to be in your life. It certainly gives it more significance. And this is something that my staff here at the show will appreciate. After one of the viewings of I Am, I decided to start doing a feature on a daily basis called First Word. And what I do is I just come up with a word and I define what it means. And then it kind of has a theme throughout the show. And I've been doing that every day now for a few months. And that was born out of this idea that I got from the film that there's something more authentic I need to be doing with this program. That was missing an authenticity, and not that that was the end all and be all, but it was certainly an element that I had not discovered before.
Well, that's beautiful. And again, that's the greatest compliment you can give an artist. And I think authenticity is a great deal of what the movie is about. It's a great deal of what I discovered on my journey, is to be more authentic. The word authenticity comes from the same word that we get, the word author. And I think many of us are not the author of our own lives. And I even realized that about myself, that part of the story I was telling had been given to me. It wasn't what was true for me. My society had given me certain ideas, and that's where it really gets, you get on shaky ground when you watch a film like this, because it calls into question so many things that we take for granted. You know, every day the way we talk about economy, this film kind of blows apart, because our economy was invented. It hasn't always been this way. There are many cultures that did it differently. And when you look at the principles of our economy, they are absolutely unsustainable. And that's why nobody can fix it now. We keep looking at how are we going to fix it. And it's rotten at the principle level. It's rotten. It doesn't exist in nature. Nothing thrives in nature by doing the economy the way we do the economy. So the film really shakes people, you know, at the core, as I was shaken. I had to look back at my life. And Emerson has this saying, Ralph Waldo Emerson, that we put in the film, which is a whole generation has gone to their graves thinking that they were helping the situation when they were actually a part of hurting it, the destruction. He said it more eloquently than that. I forget the exact words, but that's what I realized about my own life. The way I had done business, the way I had approached business, getting so much for myself, which I was taught that that's success. It really tore that asunder, and I had to call that into question. And my life was, you know, sitting inside of the hypocrisies, and I couldn't even see it. The person who's moved me more in my life than anyone is Jesus, and that I don't say that in a dogmatic or religious way, but the moral teachings and the power I felt in this life. And he said, don't even store up treasures on earth, you know? Don't store up treasures where moth and rust destroy. And my culture taught me, store up as much as you can, dude. You know, put as much in that bank account as you can. Take care of yourself. Then maybe you can step out and do some good things with it. But take care of yourself first. That's the opposite message that any of our mystics and teachers tell us.
Well, we have to take a break here in just a minute. One of the, of course, wonders of radio is you take too many breaks, but we have to do it. Tom, I write a journal every day, and after one of the viewings of I Am, I wrote, and I dug it up and made a copy of it and brought it in, a very simple passage in my journal that day, and I wrote, I wonder if Tom Shadyac was afraid of everything that he never wanted to be and then became. I wondered if this fear that maybe he doesn't even recognize he had. I can hear it in his voice. I can see it in his actions. And it all disappears when he starts to explore a greater world. I don't know how he filmed this movie, but I have a feeling that he shifted 180 degrees from the time he began this thing to the time it ended. I wonder if there's something in that message that's meant for me as well. Was there fear there, Tom?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the fear was palpable. In fact, I was so afraid of the ideas that were animating me and of becoming more authentic, speaking about these things, living these things more fully, that it took a knock on my head by the universe that I believe I participated in, that I called into my life, to knock me out of my fear, if you will, which exists in your head. Your head is what's fearful. It knocked me right into my heart. Your head is what says, oh, you can't do this. Are you crazy? Everybody's going to think you're crazy. You're going to, if you give all your money away, you're going to starve. You're going to die. And I like what Martin Luther King said, which is, if you don't do the right thing and stand up at the right thing at 30, you may live to be 80, but you were spiritually dead at 30. And I didn't want to be spiritually dead. Yes, we all have that fear, and that's, if we look at that fear, it's really illusory, because what exists underneath all of us, we all have infinity and starlight in us. We are made of the same stuff that created the universe. Everything we see outside of us is in us. You know, that's why Emerson said the world globes itself in a drop of dew, meaning it's all in us.
All right, we gotta take that quick break here, Tom. No, that's
I'll
all
get
right.
Off the pulpit.
Not too far. We're gonna hop back on here in about 3.5 minutes. I'm Tony Truppiano, right. Tom Shadyac, my guest. IamTheDoc.com is the website you want to go to. We'll be back and wrap it up on the other side of this.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Truppiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Truppiano or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310WDTW.com today.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is to increase the likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off, than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Joining us now is Cheryl Witten, the president of the Michigan Advisory Board for Blessings in a Backpack.
Blessings in a Backpack is a national organization. This teacher was concerned because she had kids in her school who came back from the weekend tired and hungry and by no means ready to learn. These children are on the free and reduced lunch program during school week, but no one thought, what happens to these children when they go home on Friday? So came up with the very simple idea, let's pack a backpack with food to take home with them on Friday, and they would return their backpack on Monday to be refilled.
All right, so if I contact blessingsinabackpackmi.org, how do I get involved?
There is a page to make a donation, and then we, as the Michigan Board, will determine where the greatest need is.
Blessingsinabackpackmi.org.
You're listening to a special Thanksgiving Day weekend edition of the Best of First Shift with Tony Truppiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Documentary, I am. You know, Tom, let me ask you, is it available on DVD? Is it for sale on DVD yet, or is it still traveling the country?
We're taking pre-orders now. It will be available on DVD the first of the year. I believe the date is January 3rd. You can go on Amazon, though, and pre-order. It's on video on demand in December, and it'll be on the Oprah Winfrey Network coming up in January as well.
All right. What's in store for you moving forward?
You said it already. I'm in this conversation. So I have a talk show I may host so we can, again, take questions about this and all grow in this together. I've been in discussions with the Oprah Winfrey Network about this for a while. It may be there, maybe elsewhere. I'm trying to make films. You know, some are comedies, some are more dramatic. Again, that further this conversation. And I'm writing a book. I got a book deal from a publishing group called Hay House that, you know, deals with a lot of authors, you know, in the ideas or spiritual vein.
Louise Hay is a blessing to the universe.
Yeah. Louise is a beautiful, positive light. And she's got, you know, people like Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson. And they saw the film and we had a conversation and they're excited about, you know, us, you know, putting forth a book about it. So I'm in it, man. I'm in it every day. I'm in the thick of it, and it's beautiful. I meet beautiful people like yourself and your callers, and it's happening. You know, that wall fell. It's fallen recently in the Middle East. You know, the Berlin Wall fell, and nobody saw it coming. And this wall between each other is going to fall. You know, I think it's going to happen quickly. It's going to be a tipping point, and then it's all going to change. And there'll still be problems, but we're going to greet them in a different way.
All right, just try to get a lot in here in the little time we have left. I'd like you to speak briefly about your dad and the work that he committed his life to, because it's important work, and it certainly merits discussion.
Yeah, it's St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. My dad helps found it with comic Danny Thomas, and that hospital treats kids with cancer for free. Everybody at that hospital, just about everyone, could make more money if they went out into, quote-unquote, the free market, but they get wealthy a different way, and that is by, you know, offering love, medicine, their skill set to healing. And it's a beautiful place, and that's what taught me that model, because that model exists, and other models like it, even like Paul Newman's Newman's Own, a group called Invisible Children, which is ending the longest-running war in Africa, these models exist where people are finding a truer wealth than what we find in what we've created in the business world. And that model, of course, people support because they find a power there. They, St. Jude raises $750 million a year, and they give it all away to research and to curing kids with cancer for free. And people are so generous because they're moved by that kind of work, and that kind of work moves me.
Yeah, no question, and it's critical. It's critical work. As we wrap things up here today, and we, I don't know, I don't want to let you go, but I have to. Just the time's up, and you need to move on. I need to move on. You have radically altered the way, in so many ways, the way that I put this show together on a daily basis. I now weigh things with a different kind of scale, and I would hope that my audience sees that in what I bring to them on a daily basis. But Tom Shadyac, I think it's important for all of us to remember, at a time where we have, especially in this country, such a great divide politically, we are at each other nonstop. We have in some parts of the country next week elections. We have the presidential election next year. The conversation, I don't like where the conversation is right now. And this idea that we actually have more in common than not in common seems to be lost in the political arena. But that doesn't mean we should give up, does it?
No, it doesn't. Look, anger has its place. But if it turns to bitterness, that's like, there's a Buddhist saying, it's like holding a hot coal and waiting to throw it at someone, you get burned in the process. I find the most powerful thing that we can do is to create something that is more beautiful. So rather than pointing that finger out, as our moral teachers have told us, let's look at, instead of pointing at the speck in our brother's eye, let's look at what's in our own eye and create something more beautiful. And so that's where I think the energy really gets effective and efficient. And then those people who see things differently than we do are going to be like moths attracted to a light. But we have to bring light with what we do. And as soon as we say, you're doing something wrong, we've turned a person almost automatically, instinctively, into a defense mechanism. They're going to be defensive. That's going to create an energy that's going to come back. As soon as we say something like, I see things differently, but look at what I am doing. Look at the people that are working with me. Look at the business that I'm creating. Look at the model I'm creating. That no longer says the other person is wrong. It invites them into the conversation. Oh, wait a minute. Let me see that. Let me see that St. Jude Children's Research Hospital that you just came up with. Wow, you've cured this many people. You've touched this many people. You see, St. Jude didn't have to go out and say, hey, all you other businesses that are making a profit are wrong. They went out and did something more powerful, and now it's a beacon. So I think we all need to be more of a beacon. And again, that's why the film is called I Am. It's the only true revolution, as Thomas Merton said, he's a 20th century mystic, is the personal revolution.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Tom Shadyac, you are a beacon. You are a shining light. I don't know how our paths cross again. I pray they do, and just trust that the universe will take care of that. In the meantime, I've enjoyed this discussion way too much, and I'm already missing you, and I mean that. You know, I love what I do. I truly, I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing. God perfectly placed me where I'm at right now, and I'm blessed for that. I don't often get a chance to have this kind of discussion on the show, so I want to thank you for giving me that. The best of luck to you. Wherever your path takes you, you are and indeed are making a difference, and I can't thank you enough for the time you gave us this morning.
Well, I thank you, and I want one pledge from you that I get to interview you someday, because I'm so interested in how this film touched you and the courage that you've had to shift your life. So I appreciate you and everything you're out there trying to do, brother.
Absolutely. The blessings to Harold. Thank him again for this. I'll get a message off to him. But God bless you and have a great day today.
All right, brother. Peace. Say hi to Tom Hartman for us.
I will. Thank you. Tom Shadyac, just an incredibly gifted and intelligent human being.
Now you see why I wanted to play that interview again. Good stuff and a good message, too. Okay, before we wrap things up, I thought it'd be good to play an interview with Congressman Hanson Clark, who joined us a few weeks back to talk about veterans and Veterans Day. I have a few family members who are veterans, and I'm very thankful for what they and all veterans have done for our country. So I thought this short interview would be a good way to wrap up today's Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano show. I'm Jeff Radford, and I hope you enjoy.
Taking his life after being hazed. Matt Safe School Law deserves enumeration. It truly does. And I want to thank Kevin for having the strength. I don't know that I could do what he's doing. I honestly don't. But our hats are off to him. Anyway, as I was sharing with you earlier on in the show today, we've got Congressman Hanson Clark joining us. Now, a little later on this morning, he and Congressman John Conyers will be holding a press conference to place some needed attention on the plight of our veterans who are returning from war. Some of them, of course, disabled, that don't have jobs. And this morning at the historic Fort Wayne, again, Congressman Hanson Clark and John Conyers will be there to talk about how we salute our veterans. And on the line with me now is Congressman Hanson Clark, my good friend. How are you this morning?
Tony, it's great being on your show. You're a real champion for our people here in Metro Detroit. And you're right. Today, 10 a.m., historic Fort Wayne, we're going to salute our veterans. And the best way to do that is to help them find a job, get them the health care that they need, the shelter that they deserve. The reason I say shelter, many of the men that I see downtown Detroit that are getting their food and their breakfasts out of garbage dumpsters are veterans, which is an outrage. So we wanted to bring the veterans, their families together to meet the providers that can help them with the services that our veterans need, but to meet with them face-to-face under one roof this morning. That's at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So we're urging all veterans in Metro Detroit that need help finding work, getting health care, finding shelter, staying in their homes, avoid foreclosure, please come to historic Fort Wayne. I'll be there personally to be your advocate, Congressman Hanson Clark.
All right. Now, I got to tell you, this is, of course, a wonderful thing that you're doing. I know that President Obama has a special program out there. I can't think of a less partisan issue than helping our veterans. Why are the Republicans stalling on this? Do you have any idea, Congressman?
Well, you know, I'm just trying to focus on helping the veterans right now. And, you know, these cuts, though, that are being proposed, especially the Veterans Administration, that would just devastate any help that our veterans could get. These cases are backlogged right now as it is. Many of our veterans that call the VA, they can't get through because of all the calls. So we can't really cut resources from that are going to our veterans because our veterans desperately need it right now.
Yeah, you know, and let's be mindful. We're not just talking about recent veterans. We're talking about any veteran, right? It doesn't matter when you served your country. It just matters that you served your country.
That's exactly right. And the tragedy is that many of our veterans that need the help the most that are out on the streets served us in Vietnam. And that's outrageous for them not to have a home right now. So we wanted to make sure that the veterans and their families, also we're busing some of the veterans from the shelters right now so they can meet directly with the people that can help them get the health treatment that they need and the job training that's important.
All right, well, let me just share. The veterans that are listening, or if you know a veteran, by the way, that would need this, folks, let me get you some information here. They're going to be connected with over 25 agencies that provide vital social and economic resources. These agencies focus on job training, higher education, entrepreneurship, and many other opportunities that are available to veterans that I'm going to guess veterans and families aren't even aware that this stuff exists.
That's probably true. And I'm glad you mentioned about entrepreneurship. You know, many of our veterans have the skills that they need to go in their own business. We want to provide them with that assistance because they can create jobs for many people in Metro Detroit.
No question. Well, again, let me remind everybody, the historic Fort Wayne, let me give you the address, folks, in case you need to MapQuest it or something. It's 6325 West Jefferson Avenue in Detroit. That's 6325 West Jefferson Avenue in Detroit. The zip is 48209, and it's real easy to find. Should be an amazing day. And again, Congressman John Conyers and my guest, Congressman Hanson Clark will be out there today. Congressman, thanks so much for your time today. I'm sure you're going to have a big turnout.
You're very welcome. Our veterans deserve our support because they've sacrificed everything for us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Congressman.
You're welcome.
We'll talk soon. You bet.
And that'll do it for today. Remember, tomorrow we'll be back with another Best Of show with even more great clips of past interviews. You won't want to miss guys like David Hecker from the American Federation of Teachers or the very passionate Senator Gretchen Whitmer. See? I knew that would get your attention. Good stuff to enjoy tomorrow morning, but as for now, go enjoy your family, enjoy the food, and of course, enjoy the football. Go Lions! I'm Jeff Radford, and for all of us on First Shift, we want to say thanks for listening and have a happy Thanksgiving.
I started using drugs when I was 13 years old. I started with pot, like most people probably do, alcohol, cigarettes, and eventually moved up to methamphetamine and went on to cocaine and eventually ended up on heroin.
I did not have a life. I mean, I owned a multi-million-dollar advertising firm and I couldn't function.
My husband packed the children and left. I had no idea where they were. But none of that mattered. All that mattered was smoking crack.
My parents, brother, and sisters are just baffled. How can somebody that supposedly has so much be so miserable and keep throwing his life away?
And I remember my mother saying to me one day, "You're going to die if you don't get help." I wanted to have my life back and my family back. And that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
Identify.